And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Hello. What we're going to do today is we're going to go ahead and talk with Andrew Garcia first about a lawsuit that they filed against the city of Mesa. And it basically goes like this. Every now and then, you have lots and lots and lots and lots of rain and water here in Arizona. When it does, man, I remember when I first moved here as a kid, 12 years old in the early 70s, it flooded everywhere. All these new developments and everything, they didn't take into account, but yeah, what happens when it rains? So a lot of homes were flooded, they had to redo infrastructure and blah, 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 blah. But then they started having what they called Maricopa Association of Governments, the MAG, and it was kind of how all these communities in the valley here were coordinating a lot of it on water. And it wasn't so much a water as it was getting rid of the water. So what we did is add new sewers put in and green areas where they would collect it and expansion of the canal system, blah, 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 blah. But what happens when you have a poor section of East Valley and Mesa out there? Now, I don't even know how poor it is. Other than that, it was what do they call it? Expendable. You know, we'll just put all the water over here. You know, what are they going to do? And it reminded me of the bowl in New Orleans, because they knew that, you know, they, them, those, don't care. They, city planners and such are like, yeah, when the levee gets breached, when there's too much water, when there's a hurricane, when there's a, you know, big giant dump of water, it's going to fill this up. Eh, you know, we can live without it. And that's what's kind of what's going on in Mesa. What they did is they have an area of the city that, yeah, they know that, matter of fact, you know, that's where we're going to put the water. And it's kind of, you know, it's not the mansions on the hill. It's not the mansions in the valley. It's not the it's not our political support base, so we don't care. Well, that's what will happen. So sooner or later, they're going to do something to somebody, and damn it, it's Andrea Garcia, man. It always is Andrea Garcia. Andrea Garcia, tell me what's happening.
Not much. They thought it was going to be Andrea Garcia. I guess they didn't know who they were dealing with when they figured out it was Andrea Garcia. But we went out and we knew something was wrong, so we actively researched. And we got lucky that we found an attorney by the name of Keith Hendricks, who has done water expansion. He's suing SRP right now for $50 million over permits that date back to the 1920s. So the guy knows his water. So he came in and he looked, and basically you're right. Everybody downstream of us to the east flushed their toilets at the same time with all these basins when they started pumping them out. And the end-all stop point was Emerald Park Basin, which overflowed into all of our homes. And then the worst part was, we said, hey, there's water in our homes. Can you guys like pump this 4 foot of water that's in our streets that we have to wade through like with boats? Can you get that out of here? Oh no, we can't get it out of there. Where would we put it? There's no other place for us to put it. Because if we ruin their homes, your homes are already ruined, which was basically the words out of the mayor's mouth.
Okay. Now, the thing that I'm, as I described it, you know, the water has to go somewhere. And they just decided your neighbor, because I went through this in the early, mid-70s. I remember I lived up Northwest Valley, you know, like 43rd Avenue and Cactus around in there. And it would just flood every time it rained. You know, our 100-year flood. It was a 100-year flood every other year.
Right.
You know?
Right, but they have to accommodate. Every time we get new homes, they do something called impact fees. And then we pay something else. And Mesa raised ours 54% in one solid shot called property taxes. So with that money, the city planner, the city architects, every 2 years have to submit a plan to say, hey, this is how we would deal with a 100-year flood. They designed Emerald Park Basin to only be a 50-year flood park, I believe. Don't quote me legally on that. So the problem came that all this water came to Emerald Park. Everybody started dumping. Between 4 and 36 hours, you're allowed to start pumping your basins out, you know, for mosquitoes and liabilities and such. Literally 4 hours later, during dry weather conditions, everybody flushed their toilet, which led to an event in our neighborhood at Emerald Park where all the water ends, that it went way up over the top.
Okay, wait. You're talking sewage?
Well, I don't want to say flush toilets. Everybody started dumping their basin water out. 4 hours later, everybody started their pumps on their basins.
Oh, you mean the other cities or other part in other neighborhoods and so on?
It's kind of like a toilety flush. I guess if you could use the word all the toilets flush at the same time.
Okay, let's not, because it's confusing. So what you're saying is that after the rain stopped and or as they were going or something, all of the areas that had the lower areas with the pump started pumping.
Yes, which was every basin to the east of us.
Okay, when you're talking basin, what they had here in Arizona, they'll have these green areas that look like a bunch of parks that are made out of washes. So what they do is they kind of beautify, you know, the original flood areas, washes, river, where it goes here in the valley. See, the valley is, we are surrounded by mountains. Over the, you know, millennia, you know, the millions of years or whatever, it erodes, and it's called an alluvial plain, I think is what they call it. It's just, it's the rock and sand and dirt and everything that's made from the eroding mountains that fills in this valley. That's why Phoenix and Arizona, when you add water, it's extremely fertile. You have, man, there's, ooh, stuff grows here, you add water. So they have all of this, as it goes to the Salt River, which runs right downtown Phoenix, and it goes from the East Valley in the mountains and goes out, you know, the West Valley through the mountains. And it's this river. And all of the flooding, whenever it rains, all that water wants to go to the river. Well, it has some natural ways that it does. In fact, the canal system, the Native American indigenous people that were here before created this entire irrigation system that later, you know, God turned last century, over 100-something years ago, 200 years ago, that they started making use of. And eventually it evolved into where they built the canal system to provide water to the valley from all over the place. So you go, okay, so this system, as they build developments and so on, well, they'll go right over these old cities, and it'll just back up and create flooding. So what they learned is that they, you know, leave the original flood, let the water go back to the river kind of place, you know, leave that open, put culverts in, build bridges, you know, whatever the heck they got to do, because if you don't, then, you know, it's a big, giant, we are New Orleans. I mean, you know, in reverse. I mean, it's like, we got this big valley here, and sometimes it be raining. And when the monsoons come and it does this, you know, where does the water go? Well, normally it just go to the river. Well, what they did here is they create these basins, and it just accumulates, and then it starts going more and more and more. All of a sudden, you got a whole valley full of water. So they have pumps and they have openings. Well, some areas are more important than others, and they made the mistake of flooding Andrea's late area. And what shall we do about it? Well, we don't care. Well, she's going to make them care. It's that simple. We'll find out how she makes them care. How much you are they warning you don't talk? I mean,
well, here's the deal. It's a two-part series. What we want to focus on right now is we only have one lawsuit, and it's an injunction. And that injunction is going to make them fix the problem. You can't collect water and throw it into people's houses and take people's property rights. You're not allowed to do that.
Says who?
Says the Constitution, says our Prop 207, says a whole bunch of
things. Okay, so they're doing a takings. They're like, you know what, we just took your place and we're specific. It's not like a unplanned, we couldn't do anything about it. It was a conscious decision that the water went there.
It was a conscious decision, and it was a conscious decision that they would, if you like driving up with a fire hose and dumping your house full of water, because
okay, where else would they put it? It was, they need infrastructure to go to the river or something?
It needed, Emerald Park Basin was flawed in its design.
Yeah, Razor. It'd be what?
It was the flaw of Emerald Park Basin. I don't want to get too much into the technical decals because that's going to be discovery on the part of the city of Mesa.
Yeah, see, that's my point. You know, I'm going, oh, well, that's what discovery is. You know, so
yeah.
I'm like, all right.
So, no, but we do want to say, you know, this was a dry weather event. Why did our homes flood when the weather was dry? Because they started pumping all the water over to us. And it could have been real simple. Turn off the water in your basin, in your area. Let your basin flood. It's your water. Why did we have to take all of your water on?
Okay, that's a good point. All right. We'll be back in 10 seconds. Here we go.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.FM.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
You know, one thing that I did not understand is this was it wasn't raining. You know, it's Andrea's talking about, you know, toilet bowl flushing, and I don't know what the heck, you know, no. What happened was, is that when all the water came, it was there in these basins, in these low areas, and they, you know, we need to put it somewhere, and they chose to put it where, is that what this whole suit is about, discovery, find out, what the heck is going on in the decision process, because it wasn't raining, all of a sudden,
it was a dry weather event, and 4 hours later, we flooded, and we went up, our water level went up, it went up a foot every 15 minutes, 3 feet in an hour, 6, 7, 8 hours after the rain had stopped.
So you're going, you know, hey, what the heck is going on?
The heck is going on? Someone messed up, turned on a pump, walked away, something happened.
Well, then you're fine. What do you think you're going to find? That they just, we don't care, we did it intentionally?
They did it intentionally.
Well, I mean, for what? Insurance companies to give their contractor brothers a job? I mean, what?
Yeah, they didn't want to mess up the homes, the $250,000 homes that are right there at Val Vista. They wanted, why not go to the ghetto houses?
Okay, why
houses
even pump it over there? Was it threatening? Was it? See, this
well,
is
within
what,
four hours to 36 hours, the city policy says that they can start pumping. So everybody turned the pumps on at the same time, which then pumps them all out and into ours.
Okay, everybody, what? The city of
City of Mesa has a policy that between 4 hours and 36 hours, they can start to pump their basins out.
Okay, to
so
where?
Everybody into Emerald Park Basin, which is a bigger basin that can catch all. It is the size of 10 football fields is how big Emerald Park Basin is.
But there's like people live there.
Well, it's the capacity, yes. The homes that surround it, people do live there. And they knew when Emerald Park was at capacity, we couldn't take on any more water. And the canal that runs behind the 202 is what we're talking about, 60. That canal is empty. So they didn't think of a way to pump it into the canal because the canal clearly could have taken a whole lot more water. And they wouldn't even pump it out of our streets because once we were flooded, that wasn't even the initial problem. The second problem came that it took them 3 days to pump it out of here.
Okay, and it's just poor management? I mean, it's just a government thing?
It is negligent. It is reckless disregard. It is...
a bunch of legal terms that is on a piece of paper.
But the good news is we got a great set of attorneys. If that's possible, we did get great attorneys. That said, look, this isn't about damages and money.
This is
about you never doing this to them again, ever.
You think they're getting that message? Are they going to get it, or what's up?
They got it. We filed our injunction against both ADOT and the city of Mesa. I don't know who's more culpable of that situation, but hopefully they're both going to be told by a judge that you need to injunct.
Oh, well, heck, as long as a judge says it, well, then I guess it's okay.
Well, we need relief. We need relief from them. You know, they can't use our areas as their dumping home. They can't pour water on us because they feel like it, and they haven't thought about where to put it.
You know, my thing is, I've been in the Valley long enough to know that this has been, you know, discussed. I mean, that was the whole point of them creating the MAG, as I remember. You know, it's Maricopa Association of Governments. Has that come on your radar screen at all?
Any and all. There's also Maricopa Flood Control District.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the MAGs. And, yes, we've looked at all of them. The hydrologist that we hired, basically we are, although our area was this time, there are other areas that the city just has not even bothered to care what they've done to them. They just don't care. There's a little place, Venture Out, Mesa. They flood every single time. The city annexed them in and has never bothered to tie their sewage and drain storm systems in.
But they're charging them for it, I guarantee you.
Yeah, they're charging them for it. You know, who cares about old people in Mesa that live in mobile homes?
See, the thing is that, you know, from my perspective, if you're going to have a government, you know, if you're going to do this thing, you know, it's always under the promise that they're going to, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then when they don't do that, you know, what's your recourse? And, well, you can eventually it comes down to filing suit. And I remember this very thing going on in the 70s, because when there was the first explosion of population in Arizona, like it doubles in, I don't know, not too many years. All of a sudden, you know, where do you put all these people? Well, of course, they're, you know, rock and roll developments, you know, and then some of the homes were not, you know, up to standard or not, but that's, you know, a homeowner problem. You know, you deal with whatever the contract, and I was too young, don't care. But the water thing, that was, you know, that was just, like, dumb. I mean, even as a 12, 13-year-old, I'm going, well, what'd they think was going to happen? I mean, you know, you could see if you go out and ride in the desert. I did. I used to have motorcycles. We'd go riding in the desert all the time. We love going after it rained because, you know, it's like fun, you know, and it's cool and you have, you know, good traction in the, you know, especially a week or two after that desert grass comes up and it's just a new picnic and it's cool. But when you get up there and you're out in the outskirts of the valley or you got any kind of raised area getting towards the mountains and everything, you learned how the water flowed. You could see where it would go. You could see how where it would flood and what, and you get the terrain and how the washes, you know, kind of naturally, and they didn't care. They saw land, how fast can we build these houses, and we'll pump it to somewhere over and kind of something, and don't care, and it's sold, and yay, and then here come the monsoon, and we've got a lesson. So this is not a secret to anybody. It's just who takes responsibility. And when you're dealing with governments, it's like nobody does. You know, they just don't.
40 years, this is what really angered me, is the acting mayor, Alex Fentner, said, well, your houses are really old infrastructure, you know. Some of your houses are 40 years old. And I thought to myself, well, doesn't that mean we've paid more in taxes? For 40 years, we carried this sorry city so that it could make, you know, with our tax dollars.
No, I've
it's
had
even
that.
Worse, because we've paid for 40 years we've been paying.
You know, that was the discussion we had in the mid-90s, and we were running for office. I was campaign managing all the there were four city council races and mayor. You know, it was Gary Fallon was running for mayor at the time. And Bob Anderson was one of the city council guys, and Ricky Duncan, and, you know, I mean, it just went on. We were having a great time, and that was kind of the point that we were making. You know, the infrastructure you're talking about, oh, they're encroaching on the desert and all this. I go, well, stop building there then. I mean, quit complaining. You know, if you're going to do it, well, then you'll alleviate the problems or quit complaining. And the people inside, middle of the city, has paid all the taxes for that encroachment.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government...
You know, because the thing was is that we made a big deal out of that, because I could see that they were complaining about encroachment on the desert, and all the money that was spent on the circumference kept exponentially getting bigger and bigger for Phoenix. And they're building all of this infrastructure, the sidewalks and the lights and all that. And they, at the same time, they'd vote for that. They complain about encroachment on the desert. And then you go, you know, and, oh, we got to raise property taxes and, you know, for the future and property tax, but they'll have more later in property, and then we'll lower them and, like, that'll ever happen. And then, and I'm thinking, I'm going, well, the people that live in the center of the older parts of the city have been paying property taxes for, like, freaking ever. They never fix anything that they have that they keep paying for. They keep building on the outskirts, and they take care of these.
They built the 60. And here's the problem. When they expanded the 60, they didn't expand our infrastructure and our ability for the canals to carry that water.
Okay, so it became a big, giant block.
Yeah, they also could have flooded the freeway versus our houses. But God forbid if people, you know, commuters couldn't drive on the freeway for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
So guess what? We'll just give it to those homes. Who cares?
Well, see, my problem is that the river's not that far away. I mean, that was the whole point. Didn't they plan to have it channeled to the river?
Or
is that a couple of houses they couldn't build?
They have a way that they channel it. It goes up. And if you've ever seen the water structure thing that runs along the 101, it is meant, the capacity for that is 1 million gallons a minute. It's a swimming pool every second. So as long as it's channeled up there properly, we have a way that it takes, and then that water takes it and dumps it right into the Salt River. But that requires engineering, that they do their job, and people have to look at the flow, and the person that's in charge of that needs to go, hey, we can't give this one too much water. That's their elevation.
Yeah, no, I know what their motivation
is. People haven't done their job.
Because it's hard. You know, it's like,
I
don't want to do that. Because the amount of land, how many homes don't get built? You know, how much infrastructure and pumps and flow has to get paid for it? And then who pays for it?
The homes that were already built, though, were built, you know, that when you pay your impact.
No. I understand. But that's what the problem is. They come up and we'll talk about it on air. Because I've been through this with these guys before. And then that's why they created this water.
We absolutely know that it was the city of Mason, ADOT, and the fact that they didn't our old infrastructure.
Because they didn't want to spend the money. They were out wasting whatever their buddies and so on.
We're building $8 million swimming pool down the street with us that's taxpayer paid with the lazy river.
Yep.
Meanwhile, our houses were the lazy rivers.
Yep.
So, yeah, we need to focus that the city does have the money because that's the angle they're playing. We just didn't have the money.
Well, you start listing all the other stuff that they spent it on then.
Yes, the $8 million pool, $70 million outdoor ice skating rink.
Ah.
Little League ballpark. Because that's a good idea, an outdoor skating rink in Mesa, Arizona.
Okay, no, let's bring it up. Let's bring it up, because they can. All right.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
You know, it's always Andrew Garcia's got something going on to where, you know, hey, I'm, somebody made me mad. Okay. So I just know it. Here it comes, you know. And this is the reason I was interested in doing this. I want to follow it and see what happens because it belies, you know, a lot of other stuff. You know, thank you, baby. The one thing that I always look at is, okay, you know, without government, what would happen to whatever? You know, who will pump the water? Who will build the roads? Who will what? And at Libertopia, I wanted to see the video of it. It was Walter Block did a Skyped-in interview or presentation for Libertopia that was, okay, well, what about the roads? Let's talk about it. And the people that went, they said it was awesome. And I know Walter would do a great. You know, Donna, we can get Walter Block on and talk about that very thing. We can do that. I can have my own freaking presentation. So it's when government comes in, they annex an area or they build a highway. You know, the 60 is just another, you know, extension of the freeway. How many roads can they build? And this is what happens. I swear this is exactly what goes on. They will build a four-lane highway, two directions, you know, two lanes. They wait until they build a big development on the outskirts of the valley. And it'll be for, and this has happened. This is what happened in California. They'll build a big development out there, you know, hundreds of homes, you know, or whatever. And then they have one little bitty access to get to the freeway, and it's a big, giant traffic jam. And the freeway doesn't have the ability to hold that capacity. So then they come back and tear up the freeway and extend. And it was always planned there that they could. It would be cheaper if they just did it. But they go ahead and expand the freeway or move the freeway out and get more lanes and so on. So we are under constant freeway construction. And they do this, you know, in order to provide for the volume of people that's going to come that they already built it before they do the infrastructure. Who pays for that? All of the infrastructure that's needed for removing the water, as they block off all of these things, they should, but that takes up land. And who pays for it? Well, what has always happened, the argument in the mid-90s we had when we were running for Phoenix councils and so on, you know, I was managing that, all the candidates and so on. And the goal that we had is, right, look, you're for environmentalism, fine. You know, then, you know, stop subsidizing. At the very least, you can stop subsidizing this development that you say you're against. You'll sit there and go, they're encroaching on the desert and pounding on the table. And then the same, literally, in the same day, they would vote to have all of this infrastructure that would be paid for by the very property owners living in the middle of the city that were not getting their infrastructure maintained. You know, pumps weren't being done, infrastructure wasn't being fixed, pipes weren't being fixed, you know, on and on and on and on for drainage and all this kind of stuff. So they would pay all of this money to fund for this ever-increasing circumference of new development. They get all the brand-new spanky stuff, while the center of the, and then they go, and where do we put the water? Let's dump it in there. I'm going, okay, it must be a government thing. Well, where's the liability? You know, who advocates for this, like, takings of these people in the center? They paid for it. They paid for it. It was promised. They paid for it. It was promised to them, but it all went to somewhere else. So the developers, they don't really want to take up a bunch of their space. How many, you know, dozens of homes can I not build by having to have this green space? And that became a big argument over the last decade or so. Oh, you got to have enough green space. You know, it was too much green space. Green space didn't have nothing to do with it. The green space was where the water went. It was a way to get to the freaking river. And they go, well, we'll just pump. No, they put it in the pump. Okay, then you do the hydraulic. Okay, how much do you need to pump? How fast do you need to pump? Where's it got to go? And so they just, you know, threw their hands up in the air and they said, we're just going to pump it over here in this poor neighborhood and then get over it after the rain stopped. So I'm going, all right, this goes back. I remember these arguments back, 30 years back. And it keeps going, and it's always something exactly like this. And Andrea Garcia, you know, someone that understands how you want this fixed, you got to put pressure on it. It's got to be money. You got to bring up all these issues of the collusion between the Arizona Department of Transportation, which is, you know, buddies with all the developers, which is buddies with all of the politicians, and it's all into this ever-expanding thing under the promise that if we build this development, look at all the new property taxes that you get so that you can go and do what with the money, Andrea?
You can build an $8 million swimming pool right down the street from where they flooded us. It has a lazy river. You can build a $70 million ice skating rink outdoors.
Wait. $70 million outdoor ice skating rink in Mesa, Arizona.
That's very smart. Yes, very smart.
Have they started construction on this, or did they already build it?
They've already got the plans and the contractors ready. And it's to basically put the Agenda 21 beautified, downtown city council.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is, I tell you where this, a lot of people may not remember. It was, what was his name? Bailey's Brake Shop or something? What was the name of it?
Yes, Bailey's Brake Shop in Mesa, which is costing them. This is going to cost them a lot more than Bailey's Brake Shop.
Okay, let me explain to the audience what this was about. The Institute for Justice brought this one. It was a gentleman, Generations, had this brake shop in downtown Phoenix, and they wanted to beautify. They want whatever the heck they want is what they wanted. And so they come in, and they decide that it was in their interest. This is where this Kelo decision crap comes in, and Arizona passed it. A lot of stuff got changed because of this. And what they did is they said, your brake shop is, we don't like it. It's a blight on, and we need to get a kinder, gentler, more revenue-making something, strip center of something. So they voted to take his brake shop, to give it to a developer, to build an auto parts store or something. You know what I mean? It was just another store, Ace Hardware or some crap like that. And it was just, because what came out of the Kelo decision, it was, they decided that it was a takings of benefit to the public by taking your private property because they could build something else that could generate more property taxes. That was the public benefit, was generate more property taxes. So anyway, they fought them back and so on. But the point was, is that, okay, well, they're building all these development, everything to get more property tax. Why? So we can benefit the community by building $70 million outdoor ice skating rinks. And I'm going, yeah, while they're flooding.
Sorry, Ernie.
So now that money that you're, see, the thing is that whether you're going to be able to argue, oh, we didn't know, and now let's quit it, and somebody else is in charge, and you should, and you didn't have the right people named and did, and your form wasn't correct, and blah, 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 blah. That doesn't matter. There is a PR part of this. It's just the education and understanding of the public. That's where the pressure comes in. And then, of course, me thinking this forward, I didn't even think of it until just now. This all means Andrea Garcia's got political aspirations for somebody.
No, I got nobody. I really am just very angry that they did this to our neighborhood. It's just not right. I mean, we've been going to the town council meetings trying to nail him. We got a new mayor, but, he was councilman 15, 18 years ago, and they just are playing like they're poor. Well, we're going to raise your taxes if you want it fixed.
No, they've already started to raise your taxes. It was like I saw
54%.
That is just, are you freaking?
54% tax.
Okay, on what? On just general property or on your trash can?
Primary property tax. They increased our solid waste and all the water of those charges 7%. So 54%.
Okay, 54% on your main property tax bill.
Yep.
Wow.
Exactly. Wow. So we're going to let you drown.
Wow. All right. Well, what can you do about it in your community, this kind of stuff? What is to be done? What has been done in the past? We'll talk about it.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied. I don't need you.
Yeah, I just want to break free from the lies. Lies, 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 lies. Okay. This is, you know, the reason this is of interest, this is going to continue. This is going to be a really good example of, this is going to have a bunch of, you know, the Lovelutionaries, you know, that, you know, personally got taken advantage of or have an injustice or want to have their government work and the pinky swear promise and you got to pay all these taxes. Oh, and we're raising it 54% on your property taxes. Oh, and we're raising 7% on your waste collection. Oh, and we're raising it, you know, we're going to, because how the hell are we going to be able to fix your plumbing and stuff when we really got to spend all that money on outdoor skating rinks, ice skating rinks, and mesas, $70 million. You know, and it's been going on for the past couple of decades. This kind of stuff, once they found a way to easy access to the piggy bank, all they did was they went ahead and they took advantage of every opportunity to spend money. Because they just do debt, bonding, kind of, you know, it's billions and billions and billions and billions of trillions of dollars across this country in small communities with debts that they can never pay. Well, in the sister city, neighboring city, right next to Mesa, Arizona State University is Tempe, Arizona. Matt, you know, a friend of ours, you know, Matt Papke, he says, you know, I'm going to just run on the debt. And he did. And he lost. I mean, he didn't make it, you know, out of six, seven candidates, he'd top three. Nope, not even close. Nobody wanted to talk about the debt. He did a great job of educating people, which was my point. I'm going, I don't really care. I was never, you're still voting? I mean, that was never the point with me. It was educating people on what's coming and why and how and so. But who benefits from this kind of taxpayer expenditures and rolling over and, you know, just more debt? Who benefits? I don't know, those that spend the money. And then who votes? Well, the people that work for the city, the people that, you know, they send out the water, you know, Glendale here in the West Valley, they would send out in the city water bill political pamphlets. You know, yeah, you got it, and we got it, and this, and that, and we got it. And then, of course, you have early voting, every single city employee, every fireman, every policeman, their families. It gets to the point that the government gets so big that it feeds on itself. And the people just realize, nah, it doesn't matter. You know, it just doesn't matter. So what do? Well, you educate your neighbors. You file suit. You know, you might run for office. But to what end? To win? To be in charge of the mess? You know, or do we have another alternative? Do we just kind of, this thing is just not working. And then what? I don't know. Angela's got, you know, Andrea's got a, you know, a plan, I guess. Andrea, what's your plan?
My plan is to injunct them, make them spend their money.
All right, define that. Injunct them. I don't even know what that means.
I'm going to enjoin them.
Enjoin them. I don't know what that means either.
Well, they've been told you must cease and desist.
I don't know what that means
either. Water. Stop putting water on us. You can't give us your water. You can't violate our private property rights ever again by dumping your water that you collected into whatever you want to call it and throw it into our homes. It's illegal. Stop.
Okay, so their
they're
alternative.
They're going to fix the problem, which is going to be millions of dollars for them to even fix.
Well, is it going to be more than a $70 million outdoor ice skating rink?
nope. So, and then there's $70 million after we move forward in the injunction. Our point of our lawsuit was not necessarily to recover money for these people, although I have to tell you, Ernie, some of these people, one of my neighbors has been displaced from her home now since September 8th, her and her daughter. Her house, the drywall is cut up 4 feet. The mold went all the way up. This is level 3 contamination, which means this wasn't clean water that came through. You know, rainwater comes in, a little bit clean. You can recapture it and reuse it. This wasn't water that was clean water that overflowed out of your bathtub. This was crappy, nasty E. coli, staph, MRSA, so many diseases in that water. It's not even funny.
Okay, well, the point that I'm looking for here is that an insurance company, you know, especially insurance companies, they don't cover.
And we're not in a flood zone, so we can't even buy flood insurance.
Oh, I don't know. It looked pretty floody to me. If it wasn't in a flood zone and you got flooded, then somebody flooded you.
Right. It was a dry weather event. We actually weren't flooded. We were through a dry weather event, an act of mankind, not an act of God. A human being altered the natural path of water.
You know what they're going to do? They're going to claim they are God. Yeah, but we're God, so we flooded them. So it's an act of God, and we were it, and government and God, same thing. This mythological, you know, headed creature did, and you can't sue us, and sovereignty of the king, and get over it.
Well, they're claiming it's a 1 in 1,000 year flood, but
so?
We have experts with their model data. I'm like, really, can we get the data from 1,000 years ago?
No, really? They always say this. You know, I remember this. This was the arguments in the Senate. They kept saying, oh, it was a 100-year flood. It was, that's where I heard that for the first time as a kid. It was blasted all over the media. It was like a 100-year flood, a 100-year flood. And then 2-3 years later, we had another 100-year flood. And then a few years later, now a 100-year flood. No, seriously.
Correct.
I mean, I'm a 12.
Right, I agree.
I'm a teenager.
It's not every 100 years.
I'm a teenager, and I'm seeing the hypocrisy and the BS of this, and then all of a sudden you fast forward, you know, 20, 30 years, and I'm looking, I'm going, yeah, I remember this. So the thing is, that's one thing that I see, I'm so enthusiastic about, you know, just communication, you know, the internet and the foreverism of the archive and so on, which is why they're starting to scrub the internet of this kind of stuff. That's why Mox News goes down. That's why YouTube channels are eliminated. That's why Facebook accounts are deleted. That's why, you know, and from the beginning, we knew this just from experience, is why we have all the backups and everything on Freedom's Phoenix. Because we take all this perspective, all this daily news, even if they take the stories that we link to and so on, we have the mid-page and the summary and what things were going about and the graphics and so on and the shows and this and all in the videos and the MP3s, and we put it in and it comes up to like 300 gig, which ain't nothing. And then we take and we store it, and we're going to put it on distributed internet as Made Safe and Storage starts coming online. We got Bitcoin technology, got distributed, and it's forever and you can't do anything about it. Nah. And that was the point, because I could see that what's coming, this kind of history, this understanding, this, because they'll go, well, and they'll use the same arguments. And it doesn't work anymore when you got video of Obama saying blah, 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 and then doing the exact opposite, you know, 4 years later. I mean, you know, if you have this kind of documentation and these lawsuits and you go through, but to what end? To tell what people what? That government's bad? I mean, you know, what?
Well, people in my neighborhood have really started questioning. They've been going to the city council meetings, people that normally weren't. They've been asking questions. They've been, you know, and the city's just scrambling right now because we do have another activist group that's going in and asking for their detailed line item budgets. And magically, they don't know. What items do you want in the budget? I don't understand.
They don't.
Where did every penny go? I want to know where every penny went.
They don't. They don't understand. I've dealt with these people before. They don't want to understand. That's not why they're there. You know, we have what's called a town manager. What is it? Town manager? What do they call it?
Town manager.
So what
is manager?
Yeah. Well, they call that what system? Town manager system? You know, it's the city council's just fluff. They're just insulation. know, they're, you know, they, that's not what runs the city. We've had where, I remember Occupy Phoenix thing, when that was going on, the city council screaming not to arrest and do it. God, oh, I'm sorry. We're run by a city manager that made a deal with the Department of Homeland Fusion Center of Overtime for cops, and we got to go and, you know, bang shields and bust heads and so on, or we don't get, didn't fulfill the contract of getting paid, and we got paid, and now we can stop. You know, they stopped paying us, so you can do what you want now. I mean, I'm going, wow, we are in a fascist, national kind of military whatever thing, and that goes to attitude and that spending and that, you know, method goes all the way down to what you actually paid for was infrastructure so I don't flood in the freaking desert. And I'm going, this is, you're going to uncover a lot more stuff. And that's what they're afraid of. This lawsuit isn't about the water. It's about the management behind it.
Oh, they are very terrified when we ask for their records. So, well, it's out there now. It's out there for everybody, and we're going to get it done.
Discovery.
100 plaintiffs. That's a lot of people.
Ooh.
Class action.
You're Aaron Brockovich. Okay, I get it. Hey, I see chickens on the side yard in my video surveillance. There's chickens in my dome. So, okay, well, we'll deal with that in the break. Hey, thanks for coming on, Andrea. I'm looking forward to keep us posted on what happens.
I will. It'll be about $80 million, hopefully, what happens.
Maybe they won't get their ice skating ring. Damn it. Will we ever survive?
I don't know. Thanks, Ernie. Have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah. This is how it starts. You just start looking at the books, and then what? Ouch.
The live edition of Declare Your Independence is next after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
This is the Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates, online at thelibertybeat.com. I'm Brian Hagan with your Liberty Beat for Monday, November 24th, 2014. Gold closed Friday at $1,201, up $8. Silver closed at $16.45, up 22 cents. And Bitcoin is trading around $368.15. Today's Bitcoin price brought to you by ExpressCoin, the fastest and most reliable way to buy Bitcoin. Buy Bitcoin today at ExpressCoin.com. The Liberty Beat is sponsored by eFoods Direct, redefining the way you think about storable food. They've created a menu of food that's so good, so easy to make, you'll find yourself eating it every day, even though it has a shelf life of up to 25 years. eFoods Direct is offering 10% off to all Liberty Beat listeners. Just go to eFoodsDirect.com/LibertyBeat or call 800-620-5520 and mention Liberty Beat for your savings today. In the news, on Saturday, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern spoke in New York City as part of an event calling attention to the classified 28 pages of the Senate's report on 9/11. The outspoken critic of the federal government gave a talk titled "The Surveillance Pseudo-State: Release the 28 Pages." McGovern was joined by former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark and Terry Strada, a 9/11 family member. If House Resolution 428 passed, it would force the release of the classified 28 pages of the larger Senate report. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a Freedom of Information Act request regarding the recently exposed U.S. Marshals Service program that uses aircraft to gather cell phone data. The Wall Street Journal reports that the Marshals Service was using Cessna planes equipped with cell site simulators, sometimes known as stingrays, at least 5 airports across the nation. The so-called dirt boxes are supposed to be used for criminal investigations, but the ACLU says they can collect data from tens of thousands of people on each flight. The Obama administration says it's been reporting too high a figure for health law signups because of accounting mistakes. It's another embarrassment after video surfaced recently of a former advisor suggesting that deception was used to pass President Barack Obama's signature law. Healthcare law opponents say it's no innocent mistake. They say the numbers were padded. The Liberty Beat is made possible by Central Texas Gunworks, your online source for firearms, firearm accessories, and ammunition. They take major credit cards and now accept Bitcoin. Visit them online at shop.centraltexasgunworks.com. And support also comes from Marjorie Wildcraft's Grow Your Own Groceries, homegrown food on every table. That's growyourowngroceries.org. This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, November 24th, 2014. Check out the website at thelibertybeat.com. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thelibertybeat. Judge William A. Fletcher, with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, has said the ATF's use of reverse stings is a waste of resources and encourages people to commit crimes they otherwise wouldn't commit. Judge Fletcher made the comments as part of an ongoing battle between federal prosecutors and lawyers for two men accused of drug conspiracy and robbery conspiracy charges. The charges were recently dropped after a district judge ruled the government engaged in outrageous misconduct. After a four straight night of low-level protests in Ferguson, Missouri, anxious residents still did not know yesterday when a grand jury would return a decision on whether to charge a white policeman who shot an unarmed black teen to death this summer. The Wall Street Journal, citing an unidentified St. Louis County official, reports the 12-member grand jury adjourned and was to resume meeting behind closed doors today. Reuters could not confirm that report. Engineers with the University of Washington have tested a contact lens that can receive information through a heads-up display. The contact lens is flexible and imprinted with electronic circuit and lights and could potentially provide new methods of communication and surfing the Internet. The researchers tested the lenses on rabbits for up to 20 minutes and reported no adverse effects. The Liberty Beat is brought to you by Midas Resources Incorporated, helping clients convert their paper 401ks and IRAs to solid gold and silver. Get their 10 Reasons book free by calling 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237. Want to reach tens of thousands of like-minded listeners every day with your messenger product? Well, the Liberty Beat is looking for sponsors for their daily news service. Support this grassroots media project while expanding your reach to a targeted market. To inquire further, visit thelibertybeat.com/advertise. This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, November 24th, 2014. I'm Brian Hagan, reporting. Reminding you, spread liberty with a smile.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Declare your independence from Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nass, freedomsphoenix.com. All today, we're going to have some fun. The second 2 hours here, we're going to have one gentleman because it's worth 2 hours. Let me go ahead and explain what's going on. When we were at Libertopia, we saw, you know, several times we've had, you know, people on, talked to people about, and kind of so whatever, seasteading. Seasteading is the concept that you go out to the ocean and you get, you know, you build a platform, you build a city on floating. This has happened. Let me go ahead and give you a little bit of history and we'll get to Michael Elliott. In the mid-90s, there was an effort, it was called Oceania. And what happened on the Barrier Reef out off Australia, they had, I think it was like a 7-10-story hotel that the lagoon in the middle of the hotel, if you had this big building, it was floating on the reef. And they could move it around, you know. I don't know if it was self-propelled or use a tug, but it's floating out there on the reef. Okay. You go into the center pool was a lagoon that went right into the reef was underneath you. You just put on your scuba and you walk from your hotel room. You're sitting around, hey, you know, what's up? I'm going to go swim with the fishies. Okay, boom. You go in. How awesome would that be? I wonder if that's still even available. Donna, take a look at that. You know, floating Barrier Reef Hotel. I like to get that graphic up because we were enthralled by this. And we go, wow, man, that is cool. You could like have a city out there. There was a tech guy. He won made his wealth, you know, in some software out of Las Vegas. I can't remember who it was. And he's a libertarian, young guy. And he's like, you know what? I got some money. We can start developing. Let's think about it. So they thought about putting a floating city called Oceania. And the way it was designed, imagine the end zone kind of open of a big football stadium. And it just floated, you know, and you would have, but it was big. I mean, it was probably, I don't know, 10 times the size of a stadium or something, the way they had the graphics. And you'd have luxury liners just come in and be like its own little port, you know. So they wanted to put it 50 miles west of the Panama Canal. It's like Deep Space Nine. Now you're near the wormhole. I mean, all the traffic is there, so you're going to have some visitors. So you're out in international leave-me-aloneism, and you have, you know, these ships that come by, and all of a sudden you got a lot of commerce. Heck, just from doing that. You know, the opium dens over there and the brothels back there, and we have an unlimited range, 20-millimeter shooting range on the horizon of have fun. I mean, these are the kind of things that, you know, people are thinking about. Now, of course, a lot of it, people just want to have their little t-shirt shop and, you know, be left alone and kind of live and raise their family is what really is going on. But you could have, without laws, you might have a brothel. And your point? I mean, you know, and do you think the immorality, you know, the people would see of having a brothel would have anything near of having a state? You know what I mean? So I will raise my kids on Oceania. So as we're raising young family, you know, in the mid-90s and so on, our kids are, you know, preteens and so on, our little kids. A lot of thought went into, okay, what would it be like? What's the law? What's the Constitution? Do you have one? Is it a homeowner association? Who's king? I mean, that kind of thing. So the enormous amount of effort went into discussing how you would organize such a thing. Then it starts to get evolves, and they start doing the same kind of technology in big cities. And then the concept of you create your own little honeycomb kind of builds in module of my house, my compound, my whatever. And then it links up with other. You know what? I don't like you anymore. I disconnect, and I go over here. I go around the other side. I go do my own. I build my little city-state with other people, and I just float around, and I find a home, and I like you. And okay, I'll put up with this little law and this stupid thing or whatever for the benefits up, and then I don't like it anymore and I leave. So this concept is coming. But the thing is that, and there's a lot of other benefits, instead of just we're libertarians and taking our tax money and we're going to go over here, which didn't set well with the government. So now they're taking a different tack. Well, we want to be a kinder, gentler kind of, you know, loved people. So we'll be in the Delta and we'll clean the water. We'll farm algae. We'll make it, you know, take the carbon out and more green and all this other crap. You know, I mean, it's just really, you know, appealing to, you know, and it may be true. I mean, you know, it could be you would have a social benefit of different things. You would be. But really, it's going to be seen like Elysium by anybody on the beach that's not living that nice. And you're taking advantage of their poop coming out of their Delta, and you're making money off of my poop. I mean, they're even making money off. They're exploiting my poop. I mean, you know, so this is, you know, this kind of stuff is what's coming up. But the reason I wanted to talk to Michael was because here's a young man that came up, you know, through construction, you know, of libertarianism, understanding, and came across a concrete, a material that a polymerized rock that could just 3D print, you know, freaking cities. And he goes up to the C-stand, boom, and he puts it up there, and I looked at, they were talking about it, I go, what's this? Oh, a guy came by, I go, you know what, I want to talk to you guys, I want to talk to him. So we made a point of meeting, I finally tracked him down, and we were talking about, because I always, you know me on this show, man, I've been screaming, it's materials, it's building tech, it's methods, it's science, it's the ability of chemistry, I throw the big crystal of Superman's whatever, and I got an ice palace. I mean, you know, I mean, this is where I think the solutions are going to be. So I wanted to preface the show with that, and I'm going to go ahead and read Michael's bio. I already discussed with him, you know, we're going to go through this, and then we'll get to him. That's why I wanted to do 2 hours, because this is going to be a very interesting conversation. So let's go ahead and get to him. Michael Elliott is a writer, inventor, aspiring seasteader. His father taught him the construction trade, rebuilding the home he grew up in Los Angeles. Later, Michael left college to co-found a construction company with a friend and worked professionally in the construction industry until the 08 housing crash. He went back to school, earned a degree in literature, and became an anarcho-capitalist. While researching seasteading for a novel, he became convinced it was not just a striking idea for a story, but could actually be done, and set about applying his background as a builder and inventor. He currently plans to build and move to a seastead within 5 years. Now, so let's ask him. This seastead that you're going to be building and moving to, pray tell, is it going to be of your own construction with your own material? You got a plan, Michael?
I do. I think a lot of people who would want to be seasteaders looked at what was available and kind of have to be turned away. But for my background, when I looked at what I really wanted to do to move out on the ocean, I figured I could actually build it. So that was the difference, I think. That's what kind of propelled me to where I am now.
Okay, well, you mean you could actually build it? You know, how do you know you can build? You build a lot of oil derricks, do you? I mean, what are you talking about?
Well, I've worked in concrete. I've built just about everything about a house. So there's nothing mysterious about building actual homes to me.
You know, the one thing that I went through, and I was talking about the material itself. So you say, hey, I can build. Hey, I can build on the, you know, hey, I can. There's all kinds of technology and things like, I think the one method, instead of just being floating and bobbing up and down with the waves and the storms and so on, more like an oil derrick, and he described it well. And I've seen this vertical ship. It goes out, and then all of a sudden it vertical goes up, and you can take it. Imagine you got a big giant steel or whatever material baseball bat, and it kind of floats out, you know, there, and then they flood it in the ballot, and it turns up to where the small end is up. You do three or four of those, or five, however many you want to do, and then you build a platform on top of that, and then now it just, you know, big 30-foot waves can come and it just kind of hits the pipe. It's like an oil derrick. So you go, okay, so we got that technology. Then you build a platform, then you start building on top. But what is the big problem with construction materials have to face? What is the big thing, the element that they're dealing with?
Well, the ocean is very corrosive. That's one of the biggest issues. So if you're talking about that scientific ship that floats up right like that, that would be a semi-submersible design.
And there are others. And we're hitting the break now. And we just got your interest peaked there in the audience, didn't we? Eh? 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 You started to see where we're going? What happens if you just, you know, you don't have to worry about the government flooding you out? You just go out in the flood. It'll be Noah's Ark. Okay, what we'll do is during the break, you know, that'll be included in the archive, anything that we discuss here and so on, because that adds to. And then between the hours, we have a little bit, but of course, we need to do the bathroom thing and so on. But the main thing is hopefully Donna told you, be careful if you go say something during the break you don't want, you know, it's there, you know, especially on the video. I don't edit. So the main thing, did you get any kind of communication back from seasteading at all?
What do you mean exactly?
I mean, they talk to you. They call and say, hey, we want to talk about your stuff. Come do a presentation. Where's the formula? How are you doing? Try anything.
Well, I became pretty close with Joe that night. I mean, at Libertopia. And I've thought about becoming a seasteading ambassador. I think that's about the extent of it. I think if I was going to go further with that, I would have to become an ambassador.
What's that?
They have this ambassador program where you become a seasteading ambassador is like your title, and then you're expected to do some, like, a couple events a year. I think it's four events a year, and they can call you in for special events. And you basically go to groups that have no idea about seasteading and talk about seasteading, kind of what I'm doing now on your show, actually. But I'm kind of wary about that because they try to be apolitical, and I'm very political.
You know, it came out that way really quick. They were very sensitive to PR and public support from are they looking for a grant or something? I mean, what do they care? I mean, I didn't quite understand that. You know, they're really focusing on touchy-feely, good PR kind of things that could, you know, whatever. And I'm going, okay, I mean, I'm not opposed to that. I mean, you guys can do whatever, but that's not going to be your primary movers. You know, well, I want to collect algae. I mean, that's not going to be where it's coming from.
Early on, when they first started the Institute and they came out to the press, they had a specifically political goal, and they said there was some backlash.
Of course there was. So that was the point. What did you think was going to happen?
Right.
You know, I mean, backlash of what? Backlash of Hellfire missiles? I don't understand what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, they ultimately got funded by Peter Thiel, billionaire libertarian, so I guess it worked out for him.
Well, I mean, is he kind of... See, there's something else going on. We're not in the... You need to be an ambassador just so we find out what the hell's going on.
You know, that might be worth doing.
You know, I mean, seriously, you know, just kind of, you know, okay, and, you know, I can help. Yeah, okay, it's going well. Okay, yeah, okay, yeah. I think I don't need to be an ambassador anymore, you know. And because I can see it, there's a if you're very political in this way and you're and they're going to ask you to tone that down, which is, you know, whatever.
Right.
But the point is that there's something else going on. And I've been following this for a long time. I mean, you know, the Oceania thing. There was a guy, you know, submersed plateau that's just like average depth of 40 feet out in the off Grand Cayman out there. They're going to build a freaking ocean platform of, you know, start with an airport and with condos underneath the strip and then it expand out and whatever. And I'm just going, so I've always been fascinated by this concept. The problem has been the corrosiveness of ocean water. And so we'll go ahead and talk about that because, but then you have, you know, resins and carbon fibers and all this other stuff. But, you know, there's a place for concrete, you know, especially pourable, shootable, 3D-able kind of concrete. And so that's why I'm interested in talking to you. But there's, you bring a lot more to it than just that. All right, here we go. Yeah.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
You know, this is it. I'm tired of you know, being dominated by the emotions of others. I hate that. You know, somebody say, oh, they found that it was made them feel bad. You know, you're leading, you're abandoning, we created this cesspool of America, and you're out there, you know, wanting to just go and benefit from humanity and be out there and free and stuff. What about us? You know, and I'm going, wow, man. You know, as the Mayflower took off, you know, as the immigrants leaving Europe on their little rowboats or whatever, or leaving, you know, what do you shoot them? You know, you're not allowed to leave. I mean, you know, I'm just like this mentality. It's, you know, it's the crab people, man. They're yanking. They try to get out of the bucket. They pull you back in. And I'm going, and if you don't highlight that, okay, I you got the seasteading pride going, yeah, we're going to go out here and be free and you leave me alone. Kind of, they go, what? You know, yeah. No, oh, I'm sorry. We don't want to do that. We'll just go off the coast a little bit, and we'll clean your sewage and grow algae and kind of solar and kind of, and you can look at Elysium right there off the coast and complain about that. And I'm going, yeah, you think that's going to make them happy? You think? Really? You know? So I get neon flashing right here. I just want to be, you know, those that would use anything like this, thinking that you escape from and you're not under it. Because if you're not in control, you're out of control. And look right there. You can see it right there in their ivory tower, literally, that they're blah, 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 blah. It'll become applicable. I guarantee it. You need to be out of the, man. Hey, man, we're out in the international leave me aloneism, and I at least want that opportunity. And the ability to do that is going to be a technical one, but it's not really. I mean, we have the technology to do it now. It's just, you know, when it becomes oppressive enough, when the land becomes expensive enough, when the opportunities become beneficial enough, when Google wants to have their own ocean water cooled server farm of the satellite based big barge of everybody lives out in a 12 mile off, and if they need to commute to San Francisco, they do it with their flare craft, hover craft, hydrofoil craft of something that goes, and they don't have highway traffic to deal with. They're there in 15 minutes from the ocean and international waters and come to work in the marina and bite me. You think I'm kidding? And that's why I'm talking about flying cars. We're talking about all kinds of, this is, it's future's, it's done. And it's only when they get the government monkey off their back that they can start to do this. But one of the crucial parts in this, Michael, I was looking for, I'm waiting for the materials. Now, there's going to be some extruded aluminum reinforced carbon fiber plastic or 3D printed my house. We've been covering 3D printing since for freaking ever, since like 06, when kids were doing it in their grandmother's basement, you know, making it themselves with laser printers. And I'm going, okay, You ramp this up and you're just on tracks. You know, you're just 3D printing homes. Done. Anyway, customize as much as you can do CAD, okay? Well, what happens when you do that in a bay, a shipbuilding dock area, dry dock, and kind of doing it, slips right in the ocean and peace, and I'm out. You know, you go at your 3 miles an hour, at that, you know, 3 knots an hour, you're out in the middle of the ocean. How long does it take for you get, you know what, then half a day you're out in the international bite me? You see what's coming? And what happens when SpaceX does a bunch of launches? You're in space. They go, oh, by the way, we'll just go colonize Mars. Man, I'm telling you, you think I'm kidding. There's not a freaking doubt in my mind the world that my grandchildren will be in would be totally different. Even, oh, especially when the dollar and the United States go into the waste bin of the ash heap of history. Because what's holding everybody back? Is it technical? Is it money? Is it desire? What is it? It's a freaking lasso around your freaking throat. That's what it is. So, Michael's of this philosophy, has a technical background, has something that he can add to the body. And here we go. So let's go ahead and talk to Michael about it. Michael, help me out, man. Before we even get into the material, I really wanted to do that in the last hour. Mm-hmm. But now, in the few minutes of this, I wanted to get my perspective out in the first couple of segments here so that you can understand why I'm supportive of what you're doing.
Gotcha.
Why was it that you were attracted after you go back to school, you get your degree, you're starting to write a book? Why did you pick doing a book, I imagine a novel, on seasteading? Why?
Well, I had gone back to school to kind of change careers. I had been in construction for the longest time. I was bored of it. I wanted to change gears. And I'd always had this talent for coming up with ideas. In fact, I've written down every idea I've ever had since I was 15. So being an idea generator, I found I came out with novel ideas all the time. I decided to build skill in that, maybe go into writing. And I ended up reading a lot of stuff in that period, you know, not just libertarian stuff, but a lot of novels. And I ended up reading Snow Crash, which is a sci-fi novel in which an actual seastead is depicted. And that was my first experience with anything like the concept of seasteading. And I thought, you know, this is a really awesome idea, great book. And I started researching seasteading because I wanted to do a maybe more realistic interpretation. And I wanted to do it as kind of like a libertarian setting for a story. I'd always been political since I was a kid. I've always had this idea of how do we fix this stupid political system. And I came up with this idea where we should, you know, What's that?
Should leave it.
Exactly. I'm like, we should be able to basically vote with our feet. You know, if you don't like a place, move somewhere else. But of course, that was impossible on land, or at least very expensive. But if you could do it out on the sea, how much does it cost to move an entire skyscraper, you know, across the bay? It costs practically nothing. So the more I researched it, I researched it for maybe a year or two, and I realized the more I researched, the more I thought, hey, this is actually doable. And what's more, not only is it doable, but I have the skills to do it. So hell, let's do it.
Okay, so then how did you come across describe, we'll get into that later. You know, I just want, because it's a science project, man. We'll need to go. But the thing is that you did understand the unique challenges of salt water. It's very corrosive.
Yeah, real quick, I came across this article on Roman concrete. Romans built many harbors thousands of years ago, and strangely enough, those concrete harbors are still in use. And it's like, how do we do this? How do they do it? We can't. We don't have concrete that can do that. So the formula for it was rediscovered a couple of years ago, and that really caught my eye. I thought, wow, here's the concrete that can last 2,000 years in seawater. And I started researching it, and I put a couple of posts up on the Seasteading Institute forums. And I got in contact with a guy who came out with this idea of geopolymers. And he introduced me to it. His name is Andy Thomas, a good friend of mine. We've been working on this. And began researching that heavily because we had this plan. He wanted to build It was a floating bar in San Francisco, and I wanted to build a seastead. So we kind of joined forces on that. And just an intense research phase, we put together all kinds of documents and had the rest is history, you could say.
Well, you know, we'll get into that, but we still keep coming back to why. You know, why would you? Why? There's not a better, more accessible, easier place on land that you'd kind of, you know, why? Maybe not. You know, that. See, this is a friend of mine, Mark Victor. He went to Jamaica one time. We went to Jamaica with him on one cruise and everything. And he went another time, and he said, because we had friends there and so on. So he goes, there's this bar. Whenever there's a storm, it gets down. He rebuilds it out in the ocean. You got to go out there. You can see it on the horizon. And there's no taxes.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
Yeah, Donna found a graphic of this. Crap, they got a floating tennis court next to it. Okay. Well, she's going to send you an email of this. What do they call this thing? Let's see what the picture name is. See, I guess she just looked up floating hotel. Anyway, she'll send you a graphic of it.
Okay.
But the thing is that, you know, what's of interest to me now would be, okay, why? There's a philosophy, whole big thing behind this, and it seems like seasteading has either minimized that why or abandoned it or whatever, you know. So I'm wondering, this ambassador thing, I would say it'd be worth it just to, you know, talk to people. It's good marketing. I mean, for you, you find out who, you know, give me your email.
Right.
You know?
I think they're trying to be strategic. I mean, they are obviously very passionate, though, very libertarian also. I mean, Patrick Friedman, who founded it, is practically an anarcho-capitalist himself.
Here we go.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Hancock, another independence declaring kind of individual, Mr. Michael Elliott. You know, I want to show you this. This graphic that I'm showing now, this is the floating hotel I was talking about. It's just like a rectangle, you know, big box kind of, you know, whatever. And then, you know, this is added too. I guess they needed a floating tennis court. I go, okay, I guess they can do that. It's probably cheaper than, you know, doing anything on land. You know, that's another thing. It's always, it's just like, I mean, why would you want to even do this? What is so bad on land here, you know, that you're going, you know, and I'd rather be over there? What drew you to that? Why?
Well, when it came to what I could possibly do, I mean, I spent much of my childhood and early 20s very interested in politics. I followed politics like a sport. And the more I looked into it, the more it seemed just futile. And I became really dissatisfied with actually just learning things or talking to people. I really wanted to put what I believed into action. And when it comes to the why, well, take the Los Angeles here. We have the Valley who wanted to secede from Los Angeles, right? Which is kind of what we want to do as libertarians. But they needed Los Angeles' permission to secede, and they were never, ever going to get it, and they still to this day haven't gotten it. And that's really the problem with trying to pursue libertarian freedom within the U.S., is they're always demanding that you get their permission to do it, and they're never going to give it. But then it really struck me, we can just float 14 miles off the shore, and you're automatically in international waters, and no one cares anymore. I mean, that's awesome.
No, they care. They just can't have a claim of jurisdiction or whatever. Because that's one thing that I was looking at the law, and 3 miles out, you're under some certain conditions. You know, 12 miles, 3 to 12 miles, they have some other conditions. And 12 to 200, you have some other conditions. Once you get out past 200, it's the international of, there is no law. I mean, you know, it's an international naval camp. You know, I'm just, we got destroyers and we win. I mean, you know, so I'm just wondering, you know, what zone are you willing to, you know, tolerate or put up with, or what's your plan?
Well, there's a whole strategy of seasteading. So starting out, if it's, let's say it's like 10 guys who want to go seasteading, what are you going to do? That's really tough because you have to deal with political consequences at the same time you're trying to build a structure that will actually survive out there. So have you heard of the ZED project down in Honduras?
Oh, the economic zones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what we're really focusing on is the best place to go would be down to Honduras for like a first seastead, because they've got this huge port down there called the Gulf of Fonseca. It's just gigantic. Plenty of room for seasteading, and the political climate is completely open to that. So that would be a great first place to go, and then kind of build numbers there. And then as you had the lifestyle going and had the ships mature the technology to float out there and whatnot, then you can move onto the open ocean and go anywhere in the world.
You know, I tell you what's interesting about that concept is that they want to have a free economic zone to the point that it'll be like Detroit. They abandon this area. They say, hey, we're done. We can't service you. Cops don't come out anymore. The firemen, you're on your own. The streetlights are off. Peace. Great. Finally. So the Freedom's Phoenix comes out of the ashes of Detroit and they start doing. And then here comes the politician wanting to cut some yellow ribbon. And now you're back on the grid. And where's my tax money? You know, thank you for playing. And I'm going, Honduras, I'm sure, will have the same experience, or at least the attempt of that. Hey, look, they got a bunch of money. It should be ours. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, if you have a floating off the port city that is the real machine of that, it gets bad enough. And we're going over here now. I mean, that just that option, that threat, you know, may keep them in check.
Right. In fact, I'm counting on that effect, because if they put enough pressure on to break a seastead up that's mature, let's say you had 10,000 people down there working, living, doing that full time in Honduras. They put enough pressure down there. They try to tax us, do whatever we want. Something, anything we don't like enough to leave, we're going to spread around the entire world.
That is interesting. You know, it's like, and we're over here now, you know, I'm okay. I'm hip to that. You know, so my concern is that it still comes down to building technique and material. Of course, you can do it. You know, I mean, you can do it. You know, everybody can do it. You know, everybody can do it. You know, it's been done. You know, it's really expensive. And I'm going, you know, the expense, but you got to take into account the cost of regulation, the cost of, you know, the permits and the cost of the land and the cost of the jurisdiction, the cost of the tax and the cost and the cost and the cost. All of a sudden it becomes, you know what, here's an old abandoned World War II kind of whatever and destroyed and ship, and we can reconfig and we're over here now. You know, I'm really quite surprised with shipbuilding techniques now. They're, you take the Empire State Building and you lay it down, and that's what they have as ships right now. You know, so with malls in them. I mean, come on. So I'm going, I went on a Carnival cruise with the Ship of the Seas or where the heck it was, and I mean, damn, you didn't have to leave. Hey, we're in port now. Why do I care? I got everything here, you know? So there you go anyway, just to buy a hat. But the point is that this is not only a viable alternative to trying to build a vertical skyscraper on land, you can do it on the ocean. And there's so much savings involved, you know. So is that where the draw is? And then what is the opposition? They're so worried about PC, this political correctness thing. Are they got some political correctness hellfire missiles waiting for them or something? What's going on?
I don't know about that. But you're talking about the difference between single-family seasteading versus trying to get a giant cruise ship type seastead going?
Well, I'm just, it would seem to me that there is, I give you a perfect example. This has been discussed. Google has a lot of international employees. They have all these visa problems and everything. Well, they get the government, right. You know, and they'll do it like a threat. They go, look, you help us, you know, get easy access to the best mathematicians and minds of the planet, or we'll just build a barge out here in the ocean and screw you. And they go, hey, wait a minute. I think we can work on that. You know, so it's been kind of a political leverage with them because, of course, they can. I'm sure they already got it planned. Hell, they could be building it somewhere. Heck, they had this big, giant, you know, thing, Google barge out off the coast, and everybody's, oh, we got to know what it is. You remember that? You know, I mean, I don't even know what it was, and I don't care. You know, I said, whatever. I didn't make me pay for it, so what do I care? You know? But the thing is that this is becoming the oppressiveness of government is getting to the point that large corporations can make billions more profit by just moving, heck, even a headquarters, operations off the coast and commute. And if you're 12 miles out, 12 miles in a flare craft or a hydrofoil is like, I don't know, nothing, 15 minutes or something. These things go, you know, 50, 60, 110 miles an hour. So you're out in the ocean with no traffic. And I'm going, how hard is this? You know, so I'm, what's your experience in people actually doing stuff like this?
Well, when it comes to seasteading, at least the biggest problem out there is there's no infrastructure and it's very difficult to make a living at sea unless you're a fisherman. And even then, you're still landlocked. So I think the biggest barrier to actually doing seasteading full time has been how do we make a living out there? And then secondly, the infrastructure. You need to have a start. You need to have a permanent installation out there. And then you need to have enough jobs for people to move in and kind of agglomerate around a single place.
Heck, man, or a freaking retirement community, you know, they'd flood. For old libertarians. Okay. So this is, you're looking at a family oriented, kind of a small, where's my module fit into a bunch of other modules and we'll be moduled. And I'm going, how large of a square footage or dimensions of what you're planning in your head?
Yeah, that's been a lot of what I've been working on the last year is trying to come up with a good design and how to build a single family seastead. I've been thinking about using a monolithic dome technology, which is extremely strong, survive weather, waves, no problem. And concrete, obviously. Or specifically geopolymer. And I was looking at a radius of about between 40 and 20 feet. So that gives you like between 2,000 square feet and 5,000 square feet. So
well, when we come back, I need to know how you would stabilize or support something like that and how it would link up with a bunch of others. And do it. But if you're only doing that, well, that's not that big. Heck, that's, you can put that in a river, you know, or a lake or whatever. We'll be right back and talk about it. Okay, let's get down to it. Now, you're doing something like that. Well, hell, that's, you know, that's a boat. I mean, you know, so, you know, it's, so let's go ahead and talk about some of the, and when you have these modules, you know, of course, it would be a benefit to have it autonomous, you know, it could be independent, but you also, do you put in fixtures to share infrastructure and plug into whatever? Because my thing is if I have a surplus of energy or fresh water production or power I can do for whatever, and I'm going, you know what? Anybody wants to hook up for me, to me for a fee, and here's my meters on every flat surface of my octagon, you know, I'm going, you know, you just, you know, plug, go ahead, plug on in, you know, and they'd be, you know, beating a path to you to get plugged in. You see my point? Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't pay your bill. You got undocked.
Right. I'm pretty big on the decentralized power production and all that kind of stuff. I think technology's really been coming up on solar panels and water production, a lot of things like that, that make it so that every single house could have power production. Every single house could have water production. You don't need to have this central provider that demands to control you and tax you anymore.
You know, one thing we may get into, there's, and of course, with the temperature differential between deep ocean and surface, as long as you got a big enough temperature differential, you can generate electricity. Do you understand that process?
Oh, yeah. OTEC, ocean thermal energy conversion.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that in the next hour, too. Let me make some notes of this. You know, thermal.
Let me send you a photo of my first design here.
Oh, we don't have it already, Slacktivist. Okay, Donna, go ahead and put, you know, he's sending you a photo to put in rotation. We'll do it for the next hour.
I think I showed it to you at the conference. The spiral house.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that'll come in when we talk about the extrusion process and the 3D printing of and all that kind of crap. But the, so you're going to go proof of concept on a small scale, and there I did it. You know, now.
No, I think that's actually an ideal scale for seasteading.
As just a, so you do a 20, you're only talking about you know, 1,500 square foot, you know, area or something, right?
Well, anywhere from there up to 5,000 square feet with multiple floors.
Okay.
Like that. The house I sent you is going to have many sub-ocean floors.
Okay. So you need to explain that, too. And then what's the grade on that? Do you know?
The grade on the spiral?
Yeah.
I think it was, you know, it was lower than I thought, but it's adjustable, and I haven't done exact math on it.
So it could be ramp. You don't have to have stairs.
I think actually a tighter ramp with a double tube or a double helix might actually be better, because then it functions more like a vertical wall, and I can just put horizontal floors between them. You know what I'm saying?
That's a good idea. Nature does that for a reason, man.
Right.
Okay.
It's just the first design. I got plenty more coming.
All right, cool. We'll be back in just a little bit.
You're listening to the best Liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Zeppelin, never heard anybody? Okay, this is what, there's a lot, that's why I wanted to do the 2 hours, because in the second hour, we'll get into some of the actual science and the chemistry behind the new concrete, well, the old concrete, you know, that rediscovered. We'll get into a lot of the designs and things that he's doing and the why, but the why and what first I want to do now. And this is, I'm going, you put forth this effort, Michael, into building yourself a home. Because when you say like a 20 foot, you know, to 40 foot, right, you know, a diameter of a home on the ocean, it's really, you know, doesn't tell you how many square feet, because it goes down too. And, right. You know, you're kind of a concept of a spiral, or it could be a double helix with, you know, connecting rooms. And so there's a lot underneath, you know, the ocean too. And this provides a stability and blah, 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 blah. But the point is that I'm going, okay, I still haven't really got the why. And are you married? Do you have children? Are you looking to get away? You're trying to create a family there? I mean, you still haven't really, you know, explained to me, you know, why you would even want to write a book about it, that you would be researching it. You actually start building it. You start getting with other people. You wanting to leave us here to die.
Well, what? I want to be free. I mean, does the human spirit yearning for freedom, does that count for something? Where can I be free faster than anywhere else in the sea? That's the first place I can be free immediately.
And if they had a really cool design, cheap, put it up, launch it with a railgun, space station, low orbit, that kind of on your list?
In fact, I think we have to perfect the seasteading lifestyle before we can move out into space. I think that's kind of a prerequisite. In fact, I'm big into space steading. That's what they call it, space steading. Definitely been looking into that, too.
Okay, well, this would be a good place to start. Starts with somebody, you know, and you kind of helping that along with some of your geopolymer, which we'll get into later. See, that's why that shows me as somebody serious, is that, you know, they're thinking ahead. They're going, look, what do I need for this? And they go, hey, here it is. Step two, you know, I got the materials to do it. Design it. You know, step one is freaking care, you know. And then you have actually start doing it, and you've made some pours. You've done some testing. You know, this is of interest. We'll get that in the next hour. But, you know, what is the minimum requirement for something for you to go on? Is it a square footage thing? Is it a capacity thing? A safety thing? Concept prove? What's your criteria for your moving out on the ocean?
Well, we're creating something new here, so there's a lot of things to consider, a lot of angles to consider. When I was first designing these houses, I was going big. I was thinking, oh, you know, 40, 50, 60, whatever foot radius, you know, huge diameters and just coming up with different designs. And now I'm thinking small. I'm thinking something like maybe two people with a kid could live in as a first thing, and then maybe move up to something bigger later. maybe something that people from the third world could afford, something smaller like that. I really think seasteading is a chance for much of the third world to move to a first world type society and really make themselves much more wealthy that way. That we, you know, first world countries deny people any opportunity to do that right now, just kind of keep them out. But in a seastead, there's no borders. It's really
Fantastic. You know, that's one thing that's interesting. You're not allowed to be poor. And I'm you know, I don't mind, you know, people want to be poor as long as, but they equate poverty with, and a lot of people are happy just not to have somebody with a thumb on their top of their head pressing down, like our thumbtack or something, and putting them into whatever system. And they're going, you know, poverty's okay. I mean, by your definition, I'm very wealthy. I mean, people spend enormous amounts of money to have what I already got. Nobody telling me what to do, you know? So a lot of homes, it started that way. Venice was that way. It chased people off of the land. They go, oh, screw you. We'll just build on stilts out here in the marsh and whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, hundreds of years later, you got Venice. So I'm going, this is exactly what would happen if you allow people to just, hey, leave me alone, and you push me into the sea. You know, all the people in Hong Kong Harbor, the people of poverty, they're having problems now, and I 3D printed myself a barge, and I'm out over here. So, you
know, and there's a ton of advantages to having a city on the ocean. Like, you look at maybe like the 405 in Los Angeles, the busiest freeway in the world. Why? Because how much would it cost to add four more lanes? It'd be hundreds of billions of dollars and pretty much politically impossible as well. But let's say you're in a seastead and you got a freeway that is too small for you now. You just float the sides apart and you're done, you know, an hour later. So a lot of the challenges that cities have from geography and water access, a floating city would not have at all. You always have water access. And if you have sunlight, you have clean water. And you're not bound by the city planning when it was small. You know, like lots of cities, they were planned 10,000, 100,000 people, and then they get bigger, millions of people, suddenly their design just doesn't work anymore.
You know, that was one graphic. I remember the seasteading Joe gave a presentation that just really got a chuckle out of everybody. And it showed a floating city, and it had, like you're talking about, instead of roadways, it has waterways. And it was like, who built the roads? You know, I mean, they're built. You just kind of, you design, and it's kind of, and you don't have to build a road. It's a waterway. And it's just, so this, it really, I think, is going, and you could tell, you know, a lot of, it comes from the mind of the youth. And all of a sudden, these young people are the ones with the money. You know, they're the ones with the ability to go ahead and actually build this, to conceive of the, and to see the benefits of it. And once it starts, you know, God, there's going to have to be somebody or something to stop them. Is there resistance to this type of, because technology is getting to where you can. I remember when we were talking about this in the early, mid-90s, it was more of a, yeah, well, you'll never kind of, yeah, but you don't mind if we think about it for a little bit, do you? And then when they start coming up with the actual ability to do it and people with money to do it, and they go, hey, you shouldn't be allowed to, you know, you deliberately ducked, you escaped, you're not allowed or something. I mean, what's the opposition? I don't understand, you know, how viable the opposition to this is without creating more reasons to do it.
Have you ever heard of the Minerva Project back in the 70s?
I don't think so.
The Minerva Reef, they went down to a reef just off of Tonga and tried to set up their own, specifically a libertarian free zone there. And the U.S. government shut it down by pressuring Tonga to annex the reef. So there is, like, there's political opposition in that sense, that they don't want you to just come out and be like, hey, we're going to be libertarians and free and screw you guys. So there's a more strategic aspect. What I want to do instead is, there's a lot less resistance to businesses going out in the sea and starting communities that are focused on an actual, you know, economic resource. So I think that's why I'm focusing not just on seasteading, but also trying to create a living out there and that I can invite people to come work for me, because there's a lot more acceptance politically, at least initially, to a business setting things up and doing things.
But it's always a vice. I mean, it's kind of, I give you an example. We had at a Freedom Summit a gentleman that came and gave a presentation. There's hundreds of square miles of average depth of like 40 feet. You can just sink concrete pylons and build a freaking airstrip and condos underneath was their plan. And of course, I'd be king, prince of it's freaking mine. And I'm like, cool, you know, so what's your rules? Well, there can be no drugs, no guns, no. I'm going, well, okay, I don't want to go, you know, but, you know, it's, but their concept, I think the reason that they would do that is not that there wouldn't be any, because, you know, but the, he was hoping to avoid international, somebody with a gun go get. See, my thing is, do we got to have an ion cannon? Do we got to have, you know, a, you know, freaking anti-aircraft kind of, well-placed nukes around the planet that nobody screws with us kind of thing. You got to think that way. And like when you're thinking smaller, like what you're doing, it's going to be hard for them to go after every ant. I mean, and why? What would be the benefit to it? So I like the module idea and so on. And then it becomes, what are you going after? A concept, a technique. So I'm going, this is, we'll get in the next hour, the actual material, design, ability. We got more graphics that we're going to put up of what he's doing. But I could see what it was going to be. It was going to be a technique to make this cheap. Raw material. Right. Prints out, extrude, done, next. And monolithic dome building, I'm familiar with that. You know, it's just you put an inflatable bag, pour concrete over it, and you're done. I mean, how hard is that? You know, Arcosanti, Paolo Soleri here in the Valley, he did it with dirt. I mean, you go Cosanti out in Scottsdale here, decades. I remember in the 70s as a school kid, we went there, and it's just, imagine you had all these mounds and different tunnels. You just poured concrete and rebar over the desert and then dug out the dirt, and now I got my own home, city kind of thing. Then he goes Arcosanti up at Cortichaz. This is not like it, we could maybe someday sort of being done for decades. And now they could be done in the ocean. But why? Leave me aloneism. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It's like, I'm over here. Will they leave you alone? Yeah, if you're itty-bitty living space, you go out and buy your lonesome and you can be self-sustaining and left alone. Maybe. I'm for trying, I'm for supporting, I'm for talking about it, and we're going to get into the details of how with materials when we come back. All right, there. So what we'll go ahead and do is we got like 8 minutes break and go through the news and everything. Then we'll come back. If you got more graphics and stuff you want to send, now's the time. Donna will put it in rotation up here with the graphics. And then we'll start talking about the actual material itself, your process through that, how it would be used in your initial design. And does this even need to be with something like seasteading? I mean, I can see the benefit of contact of whatever, but I can see opposition from them. What happens when you come up with a viable thing and some of their resources and supporters and say, I'm just going to go over here. Michael's going to build it for me and I'm not waiting on you. So then you're not friends anymore. You see my point? All right. Well, go ahead and send us whatever graphics, and we come back at exactly 6 after the hour. So, be ready
I don't think I have anything else for you graphically.
All right. Cool. All right. We'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to take a break.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
There is relative concern for things that are happening. We just have in the news today, you go to freedomsphoenix.com. I saw it up there. Ferguson. They were not going to charge the officer and the people might, riot you, to the beach off into the ocean and off. That's your problem. We're over here now. And there's going to be a lot of, reasons. I mean, we have, go on and on and on and on. The best thing is, can I be responsible for myself? Can I go ahead and just, I'll be over here. I'll take care of it. I won't bother anybody. I'll raise my family, conduct my business, offer a service that's of value to someone else to do kind of, and I'm here now because the reason you're in some geographic area, a lot of times it's ties, it's just inertia, you have family, whatever it is. But a lot of times the motivation gets to where for a lot of people that just have this yearning, leave me aloneism, they just, I'll go over here, another country, another beach, another, you know, spaceport, another seastead, another. And that's what drives humanity to the stars. That's what's going to happen. And Elon Musk, first guy, gets on Mars and he goes, and it's mine now. And this ion cannon says so. I mean, you know, is it going to be that simple? I mean, how much is the alliance going to police the... They can't even police the planet, our own ocean. You know, they're going to go out and protect property rights in the asteroid belt, which is what Congress came up with a law. I had friends, I'm giving a presentation, that's a middle of December, at a group that it started off with an email discussion amongst members of this club, and they're going... space exploration is really matured. Look at this. Congress is passing a law on who gets to mine whatever asteroid. You got planetary resources going out there. They're looking at what to get. They're going to go get it. And kind of we can't have them just like going getting stuff and becoming rich without us getting our cuts. We got to pass a law. And I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? I'm going to be out. Who's going to protect my property rights of my asteroid mining in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter? Who's going to do that? I got to wait for an Alliance cruiser? You know, heck, they're not going to be able to do it, you know, in the ocean. You know, so I'm just, maybe they will. You know, space-based laser zap destroyer, hellfire missile of cruise something. You know, I mean, and would they? I don't know, man. It's getting pretty precarious. But if you're small and you go out and you do it yourself and a bunch of other small and the people in dock up and small, you know, you might be able to get away with it. This is what Michael Elliott is kind of advocating. He's building up for in his life with the construction background and a libertarian philosophy and a desire to go leave me aloneism. He's actually taken the steps to do this. And he presented some of this material to the seasteading people and said, take a look, you see what I got here, and writing the novel. So I'm going, are you well on your way in the novel? Are you actually still doing that, or are you going to live it and kind of document it? What's the plan on your book?
The novel's on hold for now. I tend to get a lot of projects going at once, and I had to cut them down. So I had to cut them down to the most important stuff that I needed to focus on, especially this year. So I cut myself down to just seasteading and one other invention I'm working on.
Are you married?
I'm not married. I'm single.
No okay. Kids. Well, take advantage of the time now because, you know, that changes everything. So you came across this this polymerized rock, and I need to get some history on that, and, you know, the Romans and you found and did and kind of and the Russians and whatever. But the thing is that you were looking. I mean, how did you even come across it?
Well, as part of my creative process, especially with coming up with inventions, I follow technology news and I try to keep up on tech. And I've always been very interested in the natural sciences. So I just keep my ear to the ground, really. And when I encountered this stuff, I was really interested in it. And when I started getting into seasteading, I remembered it. And later, a friend came to me and introduced me to the idea of geopolymer concrete instead of just Roman concrete. And turns out that geopolymer concrete is a modern form of Roman concrete. What the Romans did was they had this, they had two kinds of concrete also. They had regular concrete they used anywhere, which is really, it's pretty good today. I mean, it's still around. You can go to Germany and find Roman structures, but the, saltwater concrete is really what's amazing about them. And what they did was they took ash from a certain volcano and they would combine it with a little bit of filler and lime and to create this primitive geopolymer that's been surviving in Roman harbors for the last 2,000 years. I mean, we still can look up these harbors and they're still functional. The concrete's not rotting. The concrete that we make, the Portland concrete we have now, stuff rots within 50 to 75 years on water. That's even the stuff that's formulated specifically to resist saltwater corrosion. And the reason that happens is because Portland concrete has a very large amount of calcium in it. And calcium is subject to sulfate attack in the seawater. And so the sulfate just corrodes off the calcium and the concrete slowly turns to mush and falls off. And so what we needed was some kind of material that was very low in calcium. And it turns out that this geopolymer concrete comes in two types. One type is high calcium. One type is very low calcium. Type F is very low calcium. And that's what I made these bricks out of.
Okay, so this is a process that if you're doing the pouring of this type of polymerized rock, I guess for lack of a better term, go ahead and give me the chemical structure, because you explained that to me, because I was, you know, I know a little bit of chemistry, and I'm like, all right. So how does it work? What's in this particular ash that makes this happen? What is it? And then we find out that there's a temperature requirement. So that, right, you know, kind of enters into it, too, when you're doing it on the ocean part. Walk us through that.
Well, geopolymer is what's called an aluminosilicate compound. So it has aluminum compounds, oxygen, silicon, a little bit of hydrogen, and this is what most rocks are composed out of. So you go, you start looking at the formulas for rocks, you'll find a lot of aluminum, you'll find a lot of silicon, and the way geopolymers work is you combine the rock-like ash, which comes from burning coal. So it's just a waste product from burning coal. In fact, most fly ash is being thrown away today. So you take this fly ash and you combine it with some strongly alkali stuff, which is, we use lye. Lye and something called water glass. Combine it with those two, and the lye and the water glass break down the aluminum and the silicate structures and then reform it into long chains. And that's why it's called a geopolymer. Polymer meaning long chains. And the result is a rock-like polymer, geopolymer, that is extremely strong. In fact, stronger than most normal concrete that we're using today. And
the one thing that I did want to bring up at this point, we were talking about this, and he and I had the same, you know, thought process, is that I go, you remember sapphire glass for the iPhone? And I watched a documentary or something on how that was produced, and because the sapphire glass is amazing stuff. I mean, you take thin sheets, bend it around, and poke it with a knife and do whatever, and it doesn't scratch. And I'm going, what the heck is it? And you start finding out it's transparent aluminum. And I go, I remember that from Star Trek IV, you know, about the whales, and they had to build. Scotty goes in, he goes, I could just hit delete. You know, I'll show you how to make transparent aluminum, but I need this other, you know, plexiglass or whatever polymer that we can do to go ship our whales back to the future. So I remember that, you know, Scotty sits down, you know, ooh, a mouse, how quaint. So he goes through and he goes, transparent aluminum. When he was talking about that, I'm going, I know what this is. It's not transparent aluminum. It's like rock aluminum. It's a polymerized aluminum with a bunch of it with silica and all this other stuff. And I'm going, okay. What did I say? New materials. Well, we're going to take this material and do something cool with it. We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lie. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back. I want to get right back to Michael. Michael, let's go ahead and go through the process. Where did you discover this technique, this new polymer? Somebody introduced you to it, but it had to be rediscovered or came from somewhere. Where did this come from?
Right. There's a guy in France. His name was Davidovits, I think is how you pronounce it. And he had come up with this idea for them in the 70s and 80s, and he did the initial production on it and popularized it a little bit. And there was some activity in it, but really only in the last 10 years has there been real mainstream interest in it.
Why? I mean, what was
I'm not really sure. I'm really not sure. been looking for that question myself.
It's the lime industry of the industrial lobby of Lord knows what. I mean, you know, it's always something like that.
I think one of the major pushes for it now might be because it's considered a green concrete. It doesn't release, for every ton of Portland created, you release about a ton of CO2 for this stuff. For every ton of this stuff you make, it locks up a ton of CO2.
Oh, it's a green thing. Yeah, we're building seasteadings to suck out all the CO2 and love us long time. Of course, there'll be a little bit of an eruption in that, you know, you got CO2 coming out your rear. But, you know, I mean, you know, science is not part of the PC. Okay, so what we need to do is to understand the processing of, there's two different types. I remember us talking about it. One you would use on land, you know, it's easier and it, you know, air temperature kind of thing. But the one to get the polymerized rock to do the what you want it to do for the ocean, you need to heat it. I mean, how hot right. do we got to get here?
The range is between 85 degrees for 24 hours or 200 degrees for 4 hours. So there's a whole range there. And depending on where you are, like if you're in a climate that's already hot, like India, there's actually a lot of interest in India about this. Also in Australia, they just poured a whole airport in this stuff. It just opened up this month. So where, depending where you are, if you're anywhere around the equator, you can go ahead and pour this stuff. Just let the ambient heat hit it for a full day and you're done.
Well, crap, man. It's a floating, I build them in Panama and ship them wherever I want.
Hey, don't worry, we talking
Honduras.
About Honduras?
Okay, blank. I feel you. It's a mass production of. You know, the thing is, though, is that I don't think it's going to make through the canal.
Well, on the Pacific side, luckily.
You know, fortunately, that is one thing. Honduras has ocean on both sides, don't it?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so you got, your Atlantic, you know, for Europe and whatever, and you got the Pacific for Asia and whatever, and you're good. All right, I feel you. Okay, now the thing is, well, the cost, I was wondering how much more expensive it is than regular concrete. It doesn't really even matter, because if you can't use regular concrete, you can't use regular concrete. I mean, you know.
It's actually not more expensive. I did cost comparisons against the most expensive kind of concrete we could get, and it was on par with that. And there's ways to cut down costs even more. If you're making it in bulk, we made it just small batches of it. It was comparatively expensive compared to just any Portland. But if you're making it in batches, large batches, it's really cheap. Like when I started sourcing fly ash, low calcium fly ash, I could buy at minimum 27 tons. That's the minimum they would sell me. I'm like, really? You can't just send me a couple containers of it? No. 27 tons minimum for $800.
Okay, so you got a big batch somewhere?
I haven't bought it yet. I figured it cost me more to ship it here than to actually buy it. That's how cheap this stuff is. I mean, they just throw it in landfills right now. There's no value in this stuff, they think. I mean, there's a lot of value to me.
You know, there would be, just to build in United States of America, you know, just to build the facility of a dock to even, you know, you're not doing anything to the ocean other than floating out on there. I can't even imagine all the crap you'd have to go through just to even think about it. I mean, just the engineering, blah, 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 to even talk, where you go, hey, I guess build a couple of railroad tracks into the ocean over here in Honduras and peace out. You know, I mean, you know, it's just, so is that one of the benefits that you're seeing of going outside the United States is just, it'd almost be impossible to do it. Yeah, I think we lost his signal. We will get him back. Let's go ahead and do that. Guy, got you back? All right, let's go ahead and... he's doing, he figured it out, I guess. Okay, it won't answer. Here, I'll do it, because I got skills. You know, this is... The internet connection, there's a problem with the internet connection between you two. Hold on while we try the call back. Okay, so he's having issues. The man does not want us to do this. You know, the one thing that, while we try and get him back, we'll go ahead. Yeah, he's got an internet problem. Well, it's probably not us, you know. Well, we'll go ahead and try and get him back in the next segment. Go ahead and email. Go ahead and call them on the phone and just let them know that we'll get it taken care of. You know, the one thing that I'm looking at during all of this is that I don't see any way that this can be done. It could be an enormous boom for a rich country like America. You know, this would be, you know, for the world. You just build big, giant floating cities, and it'd be cheap and inexpensive, and floating them out or barging them or shipping them over, you know, dragging them out. I mean, it'd take time, but I mean, it's the expense is not near what. And then, of course, you'd have what? A big, giant solar barge? Because it doesn't take that long. I mean, you know, it's, you know what, a couple of weeks, and you're, you know, I can see that this could be a booming industry, but there's always they, them, those that won't leave you alone, that you're not allowed to be free. It represents something in their mind. They're messed up in the head to begin with. And what attracts these kinds of people? Power. The ability to say no. See, my thing is, I always condition myself. I go, the answer is always yes. It's just how much. I mean, you think we can? Yes. Do you think we should? Yes. Do we want it? Yes. The answer is always yes. To a bureaucrat or government, it's always no. Unless we make it a yes with whatever serves their interest. So this is why I'm so concerned about this stuff. It's just, it's not that it's not possible. It's just that it's made to be improbable because of some they, them, those saying you can't. So what do I do? So I'm going to go ahead and try and, you know, advocate for this being done, but it's going to wind up being done somewhere else. Now, just last week or two, Michael needs to know, we talked to Brock Lorber, a good friend of ours that moved to Guatemala City. Now, Guatemala City, it's very nice. They feel secure there. They're having a good time. But Honduras is right across the border there, and they're doing these enterprise zones that they're doing. They're trying to be free enterprise zones, you know, the Fez or something. I mean, you know, whatever they call them. But the point is that they anticipate this coming, and they're creating software to allow for the creation of these kinds of efforts, and they need the software to fill out the right paperwork to make sure that they get to the right, you know, ability to have the zone that they need to create the construction area for things like the seasteads. So this is why things where it used to be, it was always in America, it was American, and I don't have a problem with, hey man, don't pollute your neighbor, don't mess up, you know, your adjoining community, don't, you know, take responsibility for whatever. I'm hip to that. Very libertarian thing. You violated my whatever, and let's go make it right. But nah, this preemptive kind of, you're not allowed, and we need environmental impact of you don't get to do it. You know, I'm going, yep, they're just going to go somewhere else. America could be an enormous innovation hub for this kind of stuff. And what's happening? It's a lot of the mines are coming from here.
Hello.
Okay, I got you now.
Great.
All right. Well, it seems like it's going okay now. All right. So the other thing is that now once you have this ability, you know, the next stage is the actual cost, production method.
I have to design a production method for this that's also cheap. So I'm looking at 3D printing. At slip casting, like we were talking about.
Right. Well, the research, you know, for this will be done, you know, I imagine it can be in your mind, will be done wherever. And then, you know, production, I mean, once you do this, I mean, where are you going to want, you're going to have it small enough that you're going to be able to just print it, I ship it in pieces and go and kind of put it in the San Francisco Bay? I mean, where do you live?
Well, I live in Los Angeles here, San Pedro.
Okay, so, I mean, is it that, or are you just like, screw it, and we got it now, and just ship all my goody down to Honduras and bite me? I mean,
it might come to that, to be honest. It's an open question right now. It's a matter of timing and what happens. Right now, there's a lot of access to guys out here, especially in San Francisco, that are really into seasteading. So, I've had people say, you know, why are you living in California? It's the most liberal state ever, and you're being taxed like crazy. But this is really the best place to do seasteading right now, with Honduras being a close second if that starts up. But what I really want to do is create a production method that can build seasteads on the water. So on the ocean, I would be building these things. I could build them anywhere. And we talked about how do we stabilize these things.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Space, the final frontier.
You know, and on our way to the final frontier, the first, next frontier is probably going to be the ocean. And what we learned there is what's going to, take us on to, other places. They, them, those are not going to be able to get, I'm over here now. And I can see it's the mentality of it. You go, yeah. And it was when I had Brenton Woods explain recently. They had a discussion group that I go to. A guy got up and he said, all right, well, let's talk about Brenton Woods, where it came from, and International Monetary Fund and World Bank and the blah, 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 blah. And we started the Federal Reserve and I could see what was all of a sudden. I could understand why Bitcoin and disruptive technologies like just moving out in the ocean and going to space. I could see what the problem was. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, the concept was, is that, hey, after post-World War II and even before World War I, all this kind of stuff, we had what? We had governments versus governments. The people were just inconsequential. They were just taking over territory and who and kind of our slaves and fight your slaves and we're all slavery. And what happened was, I'm going, okay, they had the concept that our access to our cattle had to come through us. And this government, to get your markets to our cattle, you got to go through this monetary exchange and how we're going in your lira and your pound and your franc and with the dollar and kind of, all right, we'll have a common currency that allows, instead of the individual people just being able to trade what they thought was of value. Could be commodities, could be gold, could be silver, could be ships of whatever the heck and whatever the heck and whatever the heck. No. Then we started going into space. We started covering Spaceship One and our participation in that, Spaceship One, Government Zero, and all that stuff. And when I was interviewing people, they were of the mindset, well, you got to get permission. You can't just have anybody going. I go, you know what? I'll just go to Mexico and we'll launch from there. And they go, nope, you're our slave. You're our city. We have jurisdiction to control what you can do. You were born in some kind of place, and if there's somebody else, somewhere else you were born, we'll go to that country and tell them you're not allowed and kind of because you're slavery. You're just cattle. You're livestock. That concept. Then you have the Olympics. Well, now nobody even wants to do the 2022. Every city's going, why? You keep losing money and you put on these stupid, you want to get paid off. I mean, we're done. We don't need it. Thank you. Peace out. And you got too many abandoned. Go use one of the other abandoned ones that you did before where nobody's using it. Okay, go do that. So I'm going, all right. What happens when you have somebody born on the ocean, the sea state, and he swims all day, every day with the dolphins and kind of, he's the fastest kind of I whip your butt. Michael Spit, whatever, the fast guy. They said, I kick your butt and I'm 12. So does he get to go in? What flag? What anthem does he have to have? What country's got to get recognized by? He's the fastest human being. No, this is about nationalism, patriotism. It's about some ism of we're going to, you need not apply. You weren't born under a flag, got a flag. So this, it's a concept. This is important to be done because of the expansion of the human mind. So there's more to this than what is, and I think they, them, those know it. They understand it. This is a threat to the entire idea of you are freaking cattle. Where's your passport? And if you give up your passport, well, you better have another one in the wings. You can't just give up your citizenship here without being on the grid of some other country. We're not just going to just let you be like stateless, So I'm interested in, these are the conversations that are going on. But first, it takes the tech. And then you go, okay, then where? All right. So let's go ahead and assume that we found the where. We're going to Honduras. You got hot weather to cure the concrete to do, and it's got, so now the questions start being asked of what kind of method. Now you can do slip kind of, just build and block. Hell, you can make blocks. Hell, you can make Legos out of them. What's the difference? But you can do monolithic. Can it be extruded? Can it be shot like you're making a upside down pool? Can you? So let's ask Michael, can you?
I think you can. I think we can adapt this material to any number of techniques. What I really want to do is slip cast these floating houses or float houses out of a single piece of concrete. That's a technique that's been used successfully at sea for decades now, actually.
Okay, and my first question to him was, I go, well, what kind of rebar are you going to use? If you use steel rebar, then it's going to rust inside and kind of have going to kind of, he goes, aha. There's a solution for that, too. Okay, pray tell.
Yeah, there's this funny thing about rebar. Even in like highway overpasses, they use far more concrete than they actually need to for the strength, because every extra inch of concrete keeps the water from penetrating by another couple of years. So they're wasting all this concrete just to keep the rebar from rusting. What we discovered when we started researching this is there are rebars out there that simply cannot rust. We found this technology in Russia. It's basalt rebar, where they take literally basalt rock from some mountain range, melt it down at something like 1400 degrees, and then run it through a palladium dye to create, you know, 5-10 micron threads out of it. The stuff is real flexible when you get that size.
And it's rock.
It's literally rock. It's crazy.
You have this thread, and then they thread that into cable. And imagine you got a suspension bridge, you know, the Golden Gate suspended by rock cable that, let me see, Dunra.
And it's way, way stronger than steel cable of the same size. It's like carbon fiber. It's something like 4 gigapascals for the Young's modulus. It's crazy.
Oh, okay. So you take it, so it would be in cable form or threaded, or you just kind of have it weaved?
They literally put millions of these little threads together, put a little epoxy binder on them, and then wrap them with another thing to make it look just like rebar.
Wow. Okay, so you have a, I guess the energy is, you know, pulling it through the dyes and melting the rock, you know, so it sounds like you need a big magnifying glass. But anyway, so you go, you have this stuff made, and I guess the energy you do to melt steel is like, you know, probably more. Or so it's not, I doubt it would be, certainly in high production, it's not going to be more expensive than rebar. And even if it was, its longevity is, you know, overcompensates.
Right. It's actually a little bit more expensive than the cheapest rebar you can get. But the fact that it's high quality, I mean, if you match this stuff up with concrete that's going to last forever, then it seems to make sense. If you're just going to put it in concrete, it's going to be gone.
Well, it saves you money on the concrete because you don't need it as thick to protect the rebar.
Right. What I'd really like to see is people buy a float house and pass it down for 5, 10, 15 generations. There's no reason why a float house made out of geopolymer with this kind of rebar can't survive out there for hundreds of years.
Because some government doesn't want it to. I mean, what's your biggest threat? Seawater or, you know, destroyers, you know? So I'm going, all right, so you have the ability, we have monolithic construction techniques, that's there. You have the concrete that you're looking at, this polymerized rock, you know, that doesn't degrade in salt water. You have the rebar strength, is this basalt that's, you know, done. You're going, okay, well, those are compatible. You're going, all right, so now we need an extrusion process. We need a fast, rapid prototyping, building 3D something. You know, what's on the table for that?
I started looking at how at shapes that survived well at sea, and I started looking at the Turritella shell, which is a spiral shell, and I looked at how the Turritella animal actually made that shell, and it made it one layer at a time. And so I started thinking about slip casting techniques or 3D printing techniques I could adapt to that, and I came up with one that kind of takes that shell like a plane and creates almost like a kidney shape, and if you just rotate that form and move it up, you end up with a perfect spiral shape that just works.
Okay, and one of the other options that you would have, you're talking about it using a double helix design that would take those kind of shapes and create, you know, walkways between the two hollowed out spirals. So what you're doing is you're, you know, imagine a nautilus shell, you know, and you could go down as it spirals down. That's living space. So that's where all your living space comes from in this, you know, a lot of, you got the dome up top, but, you know, you got living space underneath.
Right. I think the dome up top would be great for, like, everyday living, but I think the floors underneath would be good for, like, bedrooms. I mean, who wouldn't want an underwater bedroom? Plenty of space for working rooms and start your own business down there.
And up top, that's where you can grow your food, got your solar, do your water, you know, distillation. I mean, you know, there's so much stuff that can be done, and all you have to do is just want to, and then go find the thousands of year old technology to do it. Thank you, Romans. I mean, seriously.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help.
Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime, 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Freedoms Phoenix, .com. Gotta get some more headbanging, man, because I can. You know, that's another thing. Concerts. Well, imagine that. You think the neighbors would complain? You know, what neighbors? You know, this is the one thing that I think that is overlooked is so many of the opportunities that can be done by just being out where you're not bothering him. It's almost like you would know that I'm not even sure what the philosophy would be. It's kind of like a because you're not bothering anybody, because you're out being left alone, because there's somebody somewhere or something, an organization that looking for a reason, and you're just, you know, in there under their skin, because if you're not in control, you're out of control. And that mindset is what we're really up against. So you're demonstrating the technology. You know, what's the extrusion process, the actual use of the material? I can see the basalt reinforcement rods and rope or cable or whatever you want to call it. You know, that would be easy to incorporate, and then you have the pouring. I guess you could use traditional methods there, but you really want to get the labor out of this thing. You know, have you researched the ability to do 3D printing kind of stuff, extrusion of this material?
Well, I think the slip casting is kind of like a 3D printer, just with a shaped nozzle head, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, I've seen it done to where they make a curved landscape border concrete curbing kind of stuff is what you're talking about, right?
I'm not sure.
Well, you make a curb, they just extrudes out and it kind of shapes it, and you know, and then you got like a border between your gardens and so on. It's a poured...
A little bit like that. I'm talking about like this curb would be the size of the whole walls. It would be all the way around. It would be like 20, 30, 40 feet.
But you need a mold for it, or you just extrude it?
It would be the mold. Would be the mold. So you'd have this huge curve in the shape of the walls, and then you fill it up with concrete, let it cure a little bit, and then lift up the mold a little bit, and now you got a slip cast.
Okay. So it's, all right. So as you're doing this, you come up with the design for the home. I mean, you have kind of floor plan idea, you know, how much it would take. Have you figured out the cost of the raw material to make it? Have you got to that point?
Yeah, I've been looking into costing it. Some of it's a little bit thrown off by how much, like volume pricing, stuff like that. But my target is somewhere around $50,000 to $100,000. What I'd really like to do is have a float house where someone could sell their house if they wanted to retire or something like that, and buy a float house.
Okay, you know. Now the depth of it, I mean, that's another thing. I mean, it's not like you're going to assemble it out on the ocean, or is it reach down, you got to have a harbor that's 60 feet deep? I mean, you know, what's that criteria?
I don't picture this thing going into harbor that much. If you want to go to land, you'd probably take a dinghy.
No, I mean, you got to launch it. I mean, you know, it's got to be, or are you going to have it on its side and then it kind of flip over? Or, I mean,
that's
how do you
a thought. I mean, maybe the first one I would have to do that. But what I really want to do is pioneer techniques to build on the water where I can 3D print it on the surface of the water and let that sink into the ocean and then do the next layer on top, literally build it in place. So you can go to any depth when you start doing that.
Well, then your construction barge can go anywhere, freaking do it, too.
Right, right. And I'm thinking about a depth of about, let's say about 70, 70, 80 feet, maybe 100, something like that. So you were talking before, early in the show, about that science ship that would flip over and had filled itself partially with water to stabilize itself. I'm thinking this would do the same thing. So I sent you that graphic with the spiral. I figure the bottom third of that would be filled up with some kind of water, and that would help stabilize.
You know, this is, I mean, there's a lot of experimentation, but what's the first thing? You got to have the one, the idea, the desire, and the material. And then these are things are starting to come together. And I've seen it. It's all of a sudden, you know, it's one guy and we're colonizing Mars, you know, all of a sudden. And we're building gigafactories and, you know, more lithium ion, high dense batteries of kind of whatever. Oh, I don't need the car to go with it. I just want to put it in the wall of my house and the entire house is a big battery for it, and I'm off the grid and bite me. See, this is, you know, these are things that, you know, humanity always marches on, you know, away from these kinds of limitations and controls and the effect of it. Because our technology has gotten to the point now to where not only can we live a very high quality lifestyle with a relatively little input, you know, we can communicate about it. We can share it. We can do to, you know, half of the world doesn't even have a bank account. I mean, you know, Bitcoin's going to change that in like a few years. What happens then? And they got, you know, all of a sudden you're out on, you know, like we were talking in the last hour, there's a bar in Jamaica that he just, because there's nobody to tell him what to do, he goes out on the reef. He just goes out there and he builds this big giant stilt driftwood of kind of, and here's the bar. And everybody's like, it's a tourist attraction. The guy makes bank and he pays who what, you know? So this kind of just leave me aloneism, freedom of, you know, bite me is, I think this is where this is going. And I'm, what other kind of people have, you know, you come in touch with over the time you've been doing this? How long have you been researching and getting serious about this?
About the last 2 to 3 years, I would say.
And you've right. come in contact with a lot of people think like you do?
I have. Have you ever heard of Ephemerile?
No.
Ephemerile was a seasteading to get together like week event, almost like Burning Man for seasteaders. And they did it up in the San Francisco Delta. I went this year. And people just get together who want to live without the state. They tie their boats together just like a seastead. And they spend a good week hanging out without, you know, any state going by, the police boats drive up the lane and we just glare at them. And it's great.
You know, this, see, it's not representative of a big drain or a threat to the state because of its volume or number of people. It's a threat because of the concept.
Well, there's a funny thing. Because of their status, they think that what we want to do will fail. And that's our advantage. Like, this is why Bitcoin has gotten so big so quickly. They almost can't stop Bitcoin now because they assumed it would fail. Now you look at the status and what we want to do with living out on the sea without any state. They're going to do the same thing. They're going to say, well, that's not going to work. They'll just fail. We don't have to worry about those guys. They can just figure it out on their own.
No, they'll make sure it fails if they can.
They're just going to spend a couple of years scratching their head wondering why hasn't it failed yet? Just like they're doing with Bitcoin. So, but the gambit here is to get at least 10,000, 100,000 people somewhere in there. Once you have numbers, they can't do anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't say can't is not a word, but, you know, they can't justify it. And but they don't care about justifying. And so as these threats, as the cut of 1,000 knives from 1,000 directions of, you know, the millions of people, it's at the concept of the state. And they'll go, yeah, but what about, And it doesn't matter how many answers you have to their whatabouts. It doesn't make any difference. Yeah, but who built the road? I mean, you know, it's a waterway. I mean, get over
it. Ernie, that's why I'm doing this, ultimately. Because I really got tired of arguing with people about what would or could or would happen. I just want to build it and actually show what's going to happen. Because I think the state relies on the idea that it's the only way to survive. And I think if we show that we can survive without the state, that we end up pulling the linchpin and the state will simply crumble.
You know, I give you... Paul Rosenberg, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's become a good friend of the show and spoke at our Freedom Summit. He does Freeman's Perspective, and he's a great guy. And I had him on after I was on vacation doing a lot. I just kind of in a funk, and I'm going, talking to Paul, he'll make me feel better. And I'm like, this idea, I'm like, are we at peak tyranny yet? I mean, you know, we have peak. And he goes, no. There's never such a thing as peak tyranny until, you know, they just, you know, heal, you know, what's the vision of the future is, you know, imagine a heel of a boot on a face forever kind of thing.
Right.
And
right.
Whether it's the left jack boot or the right jack boot or the jack boot on your throat party, I mean, what's right. The difference, you know? So he goes, but I think we're getting towards peak obedience.
Hmm.
And I go, oh, I'm so going to rip you off on that one. You know, peak obedience, the concept, and you represent that. I mean, it gets to a point to where, you know, the cup runneth over of, you know, people's ability to tolerate the tyrannical behavior, this authoritarian statist, we rule you, I'm, you know, cattle, see, we know you're our cattle because you're on our list. I mean, you know,
right.
And I'm going, wow, this concept, I think that we're getting, especially with communication, the internet and Bitcoin. I don't think they really understood what that meant. They don't
right
get
now,
it.
People have nowhere to go, but I want to see a city of a billion people on the sea.
Billion people on the sea. That would mean, well, hell, there's probably that many already anyway. Living on coastlines and freaking go
right,
to China.
Exactly.
But, you know, Vietnam or something. So I'm just going, all right. You know, certainly the Indonesian areas, India, you know, there's a lot of people already have experience doing this. And we give them better tech. You know, they already have floating cities. You know, I mean, floating schools, floating medical, floating. I mean, it's already happening. We just make it better with the help of people like Michael Elliott. Is there a webpage you want them to go to? Anything you got ready for people?
Go to Reddit, rfloathouse. That's the best place.
Reddit?
rfloathouse.
rfloathouse. You know, Reddit, Floathouse, I bet you it comes up. This is a conversation we're going to continue. I'm glad Michael took the time to help us be inspired by what he's doing.
Since time began.
There you go. Done. All right.
Thanks.
Donna's going to go ahead and take, when we get done, I got to do the editing and then blah, 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 blah. And then she'll take and get it up on the archive page that you already have the link to, or you go to Freedom's Phoenix, you'll see it. And then once it's populated, it'll say in the title, it'll say video and MP3 loaded. So then you'll see where the MP3 file is and where the video files are. And then you can pimp it however you want or pimp that actual address to the archive that will have other information and graphics and so on in there. Do you have any photos that on the archive page, Donna? Yes, no?
One or two.
Put one or two up there.
Okay, okay. So that's good. My main thing is I want them to see the formulation, you know, for the non-transparent aluminum, you know, the graphic for the formula and the chemistry of it, and then the actual picture of a couple of the blocks, and that's good enough. And then maybe is the house thing and a couple of other whatever. But the thing,
I can send you a photo of the geopolymer block. I've got a nice one.
Well, she has photos.
Oh, she does.
You know, the blocks, you know, up there. The this keep me informed on this. When there's a milestone or an area or a revelation of what's going on with the seasteading, I'm not really, there's something else, there's a plan of something, there's something else. It's gotten to where I'm feeling that it's not like, you know, innovative individuals, kind of this Elon Musk dream thing. It's like a committee, you know?
Yeah, I think they're trying to play within the system. They're trying to play within the game. They're trying to be friendly.
Yeah, they're Bitcoin Foundation, you know?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I mean, probably the same people. You know, it's that mindset, you know, and I'm just going, I get it.
I didn't get it. I didn't get a chance to mention it, but what I'm planning to do is make a scale model and then kickstart a full model within next year or two.
Very cool. Yeah, no, I'd want to pimp that.
No, awesome.
Better hurry up. I mean, you know, it's going to be, you know, I'm looking for non-thermonuclear fallout of the, you know, the whole whatever the hell. You know, it's just, and I don't really worry about it because I see, you know, this kind of, yeah, there's nothing we can do. But okay, I tell you this, and I'll let you go with this and you get the idea. We had this girl, her name was Laura. She is 26, 28, I think, from Finland. And she got a grant from the university to do her master's thesis here in America on the idea of why is America so enraptured with prepping. So in Finland, they're like, hey, you know, prepping, it's called the 3 months of we better do it now because we don't get to do it later or we die prepping. I don't know what the hell America's talking about, you know. So they come here because all they see is American television. And when I start talking to youth around the world, we have a thing that's called Language of Liberty, an organization out of here, out of Arizona, that a guy named Glenn Kripe does around Europe. And it was his payback to his Slovak ancestry. He saw how bad that his grandparents' homes were doing in, you know, Eastern Europe and Europe and all this kind of, and he's like, you know, we can use the language of liberty, which was primarily English, and these young kids, almost everybody, whatever language you are, they have as their second language English. So they're doing the freedom oriented kind of, you know, doing libertopias all around Europe for years. So these guys, they'll come here and they'll do an internship at the Goldwater Institute, they'll do some Cato thing or whatever, and of course they want to go these are the politicos. So all the guys, well, if you want to get a dose of the freedom thing, well, we need to go see Ernie, you know. So they come over and see what we're doing and all the things that's happening. They come on the show and we talk. Mm-hmm. By talking to these people, they all have a common theme. And Laura did it best when she came and she said, I went to the South. I went California, Idaho, Utah, Arizona. And for a month, she went to all these like doomsday prepper guys and so on. And no matter what range or socioeconomic or focus or theology or philosophy or whatever was driving them to prepare for whatever, she said there was one common theme that was the same for all of them. They didn't feel that they had any kind of a voice or representation. Voting didn't work. You know, advocacy didn't work. Doing whatever it was, they didn't feel they had any voice. Somebody else was running their lives. And by doing this, they felt that every time they bought a bag of beans, every time that they built a little, every time that they got another solar panel, that was their vote. That was their expression. That was their outlet. And they felt so much better about their lives and themselves because they actually got to have a voice with their actions. And I go, whoa, that is a powerful common denominator. And I go, people, they are abandoning the concept of government, and somebody, I'm going to go vote or advocate or go bitch at City Hall or something for something. They're just going to do it themselves. And I go, ew. And that, you know, is represented by what you're doing and other people and friends. This is a common trait that is just an unexpected, you know, consequence. You know, unintended consequences of what those are doing. And when all of a sudden the blockchain technology and Bitcoin, I mean, how would you define property rights or areas where you can use blockchain technology out in the ocean and bite me? I mean, you know, this is, they don't understand. Yep. It's a social, it's a culture thing anyway. So I'm going, okay, so what's the speed of this? It's going to start ramping up pretty freaking fast. Mm-hmm. Once you get this kind of technology done, I'd be shocked if we're not. I mean, hell, it was what? In the 80s, 90s, they're doing floating hotels on the Barrier Reef. And now they got like floating tennis courts. You know, so I'm going, okay, this is, here we go. So I'm wondering where the opposition is going to come from. Well, Cody Wilson announced, we just had him on the show a couple of days ago, where he's going on about how he's running for Bitcoin Foundation to shut it down. And I'm going, that right there, it could be easily have the same kind of dissension in the seasteading thing if they try to integrate too much with the government, going, and we don't even got to shut it down. We're just doing our own thing over here in Honduras and bite me.
Right. Interesting.
Now, the thing is that you, and it's the same mentality that you're up against. I hope not, but I mean, I can feel it, you know. We got to, you know, get approval from somebody or something. And they think no more that these guys are a real threat. A few days ago, a week or two, you'll see a show for Brock Lorber, and he's a good friend, used to live in Vegas, a lot of common friends, a real revolutionary, and his wife, big corporate, blah, 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 Chicago, and then they're moving. And he's like, you know, I'm done with it. And he moved to Guatemala City, and then she'll follow and get, because they got that kind of relationship, they move and do whatever. Mm-hmm. So what happens, he's in Guatemala City now, setting up the infrastructure for a transition for a company like yours to go to Honduras, and they do all the work for you. Fill out one form and boom, and you're done. That is their business model, is for people to have business models to go into Honduras for these free zones. That's their whole function.
Awesome.
So I look up that show, listen to it. I did like a whole day with Brock. You know, we're just shooting the crap, you know, because we're friends. But it was, he sees this business opportunity for exactly people like you.
Awesome. So what was his last name?
Lorber. L-O-R-B-E-R.
Will do.
So you just go to freedomsphoenix.com. On the left side, you scroll down until it says, well, here, just do it now. Go to freedomsphoenix.com, and I'll show you where the show is.
All right. I'm there.
On the left side, scroll down until it has that box that says Declare Your Independence, Ernest Hancock, and then click on that, and it takes you to the show archive.
Okay. Yep, there.
Okay, now scroll down. I don't know. It's within the last 6-7 shows or something. You'll see Brock Lorber, Guatemala City.
Yep, got it.
All right, that's it. Cool. You know, you listen to that. That was their business model, was to have it easier for people to have a business model to go into Honduras. That's the point.
Awesome.
Out of Guatemala City, doing it. Done. Next.
Yep.
Next. You know, so you call Brock. You know, you need to get his number. Donna, send Michael Brock's email and his phone number. Introduce, send it to him and to Brock. Say, I already want you guys to talk, discuss. You know, he's looking manufacturer seasteading out of Honduras. You just say that to Brock, and he'll go, what? I have plenty of people for you to talk to. And, wait a minute, here comes, investors, okay? See my point? Because this is, because what's the problem? The problem is just the railroad that goes from, you know, the hill down into the harbor of, you know, print it and, you know, do and send, or, you know, build your ship that you go out in the ocean to 3D print, or you just got to get out from under the thumb of they, them, those here.
Right, there's a lot of push for that, a lot of interest in that. It's going to be huge.
All right, man. I'm hip. You know, keep me informed. Let me know what's up. And then, of course, are you, you know, Anarcopoco might be of interest to you. Is that something you're interested in?
What is that?
It's a Dollar Vigilante, Jeff Berwick's event in February in Acapulco. Calls it an Acapulco, you know. So, but it's out of the country. You know, it's there. It's in riot right now, which is cool. You know, we get to hear about that when we get there. But the, they're storming the presidential palace. You know, that the fact that they have a presidential palace, that tells you all you need to know right there. But the, so they're having this event. And it's going to be people really the anarchist of like mind, you know. And I think Jeffrey Tucker's going to be there too. Yeah, he's going. Yeah, he's one of the speakers too. So he's going to be there. We'll be there, and we're like a silver sponsor, you know, helping with marketing and all that kind of stuff. So and then he had Gulch Chili thing. That's kind of they're retake it over, and it's got its issues of whatever. Who cares? But the thing is that it's those mindset of people. When you start, you know, dealing with, you're not dealing with the government. You're not worried about water rights. You're not, you know, having all this land based kind of, you know, government crap. And you come in and talk to these people about the possibility of seasteading, along with the ability to create a company that's being able to produce and harbor with in Honduras, and kind of all of a sudden, these are exactly the people that are wanting to talk to Michael.
Right. That looks fantastic. I might very well go to that.
So, well, did you pull it up? Just go.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, there you go. Done. Next.
Got it here.
Who's your friend? Who's your pal?
See, that's the great thing about shows like yours, that bringing together all these resources of people that normally would have trouble finding themselves. That's
No, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, that's, you know, that it, really the impact that I can have. I mean, God, it was just yesterday I was doing the same kind. You know, because a lot of these things I can see in different technology and different desires and different, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I will start, you know, bringing them together and just go, hey, peace, and let me know. And then it's a year or two later. I've been doing this for over a decade. It's a year or two later, and all of a sudden they're going concerned. And, hey, thanks. I'm like, right on. You know, I tell you, a lot of it has been, it's always distributed. You know, it's connecting made safe with storage with blockchain technology, the Bitcoin of the foundation of the 3D printing of the desktop mill kind of, you know, stuff. And a lot of these things happen naturally or on their own. You know, I didn't know this. Paul Puey from Airbits, remember him there?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Paul, we had him on for a couple of hours. I talked to him yesterday. I'm hooking him up with Tragedy and Hope to do a show because I think they're of like mind and, you know, kind of, you know, get that going. And then, of course, he saw the opportunity, and even before I did, you know, like a month before I did, of meeting with David Irvine from MadeSafe, which is a distributed internet, you know, and storage, everything. And he had already started working with them and incorporating some different things. And when I go, you know, you sound like, you know, this is a distributed tech, you should talk to him. He goes, well, I already did. I had 4-hour dinner with him in Texas. I go, you mean New York? Texas. I go, I didn't even know he was in Texas. I was in Texas at the Bitcoin thing. I didn't even know he was there. Yeah, he's off meeting with you for 4 hours for dinner, you know? So right. This is of like minds, you know, people like Paul and you and myself and others. And I don't have the resources to really be the Thiel that comes in with the money. But right. A lot of times, enormous amounts of money is wasted, squandered, or not made because you just didn't know the tech was there or another person was there or right. The resources right. Somebody brought to it. It's just people of like mind. And with the like mind is starting to get in the seasteading, because I've been from the beginning of this. I mean, way before they even existed. And there are a lot of people, that's why you saw a lot of the guys there going, oh, yeah, I remember the seasteading. They never even heard of Oceania. They don't remember this stuff. You know, but a lot of the older libertarian, we remember.
Right.
And the thing was always, what's your conflict resolution? Well, it's getting down to where I tell you what my conflict resolution is. I don't have to have conflict. I just detach and I go over there. Bite me.
Right. Right.
Conflict
exactly.
Resolution solved. You know, so this concept I'm looking forward to, but I can see it evolving. They're worried about what other people say, do, think. And I go, okay, why is it, I don't know, a tax break? Is it, you know, you're looking for some world money, something investing, green, something, what? I don't get it, you know. So I'm not really, once I see that, then I immediately think of things like the Bitcoin Foundation. I mean, it's just, you know, it's always those guys, you know, that mentality. They're looking for permission slip, or it's going to be cheaper, easier. Then you come along and you just kind of bypass it.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why I've always kind of kept my distance from them a little bit.
Well, I'd be interested. You want to be ambassador or whatever. I mean, go ahead and find whatever you learn. It's good marketing for, you know, finding the people. Yeah, give me your email. But the thing is that I'm going, I'm not looking to get some sanction from the king. That's the point.
Right, exactly.
You know, and just
they're trying to sell it like through the lens of a statist eye on things. They're like, oh, we're just trying to, you know, do our thing here. Leave us alone. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, why. What's the motivation? Who got in their craw? I mean, well, I don't understand.
Well, Patrick Friedman took off. I mean, he helped found the organization. Now he's not running it. Joe Quirk's running it.
well, I wonder if that's why he left.
It might be.
I mean, I don't know. You know, this is, you know, that might be, you know, Patrick, we know David has spoken at our Freedom Summit before, and I know David well, you know, Patrick. is his name Patrick? I thought it was Patry. Donna, Patry Friedman, you know, see if you can track him down. If you have to go through David, and we'll see if we can get him. Because I haven't talked to him about his lead, because I just didn't care. I mean, once they started.
He's working for Google now.
Yay. Doing what?
Programming. I don't know.
Wow. Well, then, you know, if you got him coming over to Google, Google's already got a city plan of employees to bite me.
Maybe he is doing some kind of seasteading-based project for Google. Who knows?
I think I already know. I mean, why else? You know, it's just, damn it. You know, I know, not that I care, but it's just, that's what it's going to take. But it'll be kind of this central, you know, business based on whatever they need. It's not going to really benefit anybody other than sweatshop for coders or something. I mean, I don't know, you know, but I'm looking for the, you know, what it would be nice is that they were able to purchase your device and they go, I'll come to work and I'll walk the gangplank over to the big thing, but I'll float in my own little, you piss me off, or I want to go party. I'll go out 3 miles over there and we'll crank up the speakers.
Right. I've been really exploring the concepts of how people would live together if we had a whole city like this that could float. I mean, why would you commute an hour a day if you can just float your house next to your boss? You know, if you don't like your neighbors, you don't have to live there anymore. There's so many things that change about a floating city that are just awesome.
Yep. Well, of course, you just got to deal with the tech. You know, I mean, it's not like they don't have enough, you know, deep sea oil rigs out in the middle of the whatever. But that's right. When you start getting in the big ocean. There are opportunities, you know, more coastal that, you know, give you a lot more protection from that kind of stuff. But, you know, yeah, and you got tsunamis that you just kind of, you know, ride
and
over.
that's why we want to pioneer it in Honduras, because they've got that big Gulf of Fonseca. It's got a lot of protection from deep water out there. So it's a perfect place to start, you know, and learn this thing and try different designs and not face the full brunt of hurricanes and whatnot.
You know, what kind of protection would you do? I mean, you think a Somali pirate kind of thing. They go, hey, we'll just go and do a night raid on the whatever. And you go, yeah, well, I got my robot automatic, 50 caliber pop-up dome, robo whatever the hell, none shall pass. I mean, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, what kind of armament or even that an opportunity? Or do you just, you know, bunker the door and I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. You know, so I'm just wondering what kind of security thing you think you have to worry about.
Well, if you've only got a few people in the seastead, then you're going to be providing your own security. There aren't enough of you to hire like a full-time security guard or coast guard type of thing. But if you picture a city of maybe 10,000, 100,000 people, you wouldn't have any problem hiring full-time security to run the place, just like your own personal coast guard.
Hell, I got Silicon Valley is now their security is right, robots.
Right? Why not have floating drones? I mean,
Floating drone with a little air attachment to it of automatic go and video I do, and you know, don't interrupt my television programming too long. I got a little, you know, picture in picture up there, and you know, boom, pirate done next, and I go back to my football game. You know, see, this is I'm telling you, this is the kind of examples they go. But what about? Oh, I got an app for that. What about? Right, well, right. I SpaceX put up our own city satellite for communication. Oh, by the way, it also has an ion cannon. And for anybody, I mean, you know, so I mean, it's like you're not allowed to have answers, damn it, you know. All right, I'm hip. Keep me informed, man. You know, as you get more progress, and try and go ahead and listen to the Lorber show. I mean, a lot of it's just us, you know, blah blah blah, but it'll be entertaining and informative. And then contact him, you know, about the op, because they are right up to speed. I mean, they are right nose of the grindstone on this Honduras thing, and their whole business is to make that opportunity seamless for guys exactly like you. That's their point.
Great.
Yeah, I think so. You know, all right, man. Thanks a lot, Michael. I appreciate the time.
All right, Ernie. Thank you, man. Take care.
Peace.